From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Final 16th, here's Signalman and Pouskapar Faye to the wire together. Signalman inside, got it!
Day at the Spa, still five from the front, and Better Lucky has stormed to the lead. Better Lucky now in front of Summer Soiree in second. Between horses, Tis Flirtatious. Better Lucky, Tis Flirtatious second. Better Lucky wins the Matriarch.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And here comes Camelot Kitten with a late run down at the Royal Blackjack. Cat battles on as well. Annals of Time. Annals of Time out of nowhere. Annals of Time just blew past him. And Annals of Time, a striking one.
Clearing air in front with a 16th to go. Travel Column's getting on track late in the game. Here comes Travel Column. Travel Column runs down Clearing Air to win the Goldenrod.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the show that launched a network. This is indeed the Equine Forum, and it's all presented by Woodbine Entertainment right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me in the saddle again right up until 11 a.m. Eastern, all across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and around the country, and of course streaming and podcast worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.com. .net. Well, last weekend, as I opened the show, I referenced the fact that there were only three graded stakes slated for the weekend. Well, what a difference a week makes, huh? A Thanksgiving weekend feast of stakes action began on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, with two stakes races on opening day of the Fairgrounds meet, plus the Grade 2 Fall City at Churchill and the Grade 3 Red Carpet at Del Mar. 11 more stakes races were contested at seven different tracks across the country yesterday, including the Grade 1 Clark at Churchill Downs. Congratulations to all the winning connections there. Today and tomorrow, the hits, well, they just keep on coming. A total of 27 stakes are going to be run throughout North America over the next 2 days. 20 today, seven more tomorrow. And no matter which region you prefer to follow, whatever your home track is, your home part of the country that you like to bet, there is guaranteed to be something for you. Because those 27 stakes are going to be run at Aqueduct, Churchill Downs, Charlestown, Del Mar, Fairgrounds, Golden Gate, Laurel, Mahoning Valley, and Woodbine. Aqueduct does have the Grade 3 Long Island today and the Grade 3 Fall Highway tomorrow, which is always a really, really fun race. But the hub of the greatest stakes action is going to take place at Churchill Downs and at Del Mar. And Churchill Downs publicity manager Kevin Kirstein is going to preview their four Saturday stakes. That comes up in just a few minutes, right around 8:15 Eastern time. And among those four stakes are a pair of Grade 2s, the Goldenrod for the 2-year-old fillies and the Kentucky Jockey Club for the 2-year-old boys, which really is perfect timing on the part of Churchill Downs, because Churchill opens their first Kentucky Derby future wager on Thursday, the first of the year. So we start to look ahead to the Run for the Roses. Regardless of what happens in that Kentucky Jockey Club later today, I think it's a pretty safe bet that the all other colts and geldings option is going to be the favorite coming out of pool number one. And, you know, that's not earth-shattering. That's not breaking news, because that is typically the case. But this year, there's a little bit of a different twist. The All Others category includes horses under the care of trainers suspended from competing in the 2022 Kentucky Derby, a.k.a. Bob Baffert. Horses which would likely have been included among the individual betting interests now are part of that all others category, which means talented 3-year-olds such as Corniche, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner and the Winter Book favorite for the 2022 Kentucky Derby, by the way, is not part of the main body of the field. He would have been for sure. Messier, Pinehurst, and Rockefeller, all trained by the 7-time Derby winner, are not among the 22 individual betting interests, but they are included within the Parimutuel field. So, yeah, the all others category is going to be the overwhelming favorite coming out of pool number one this weekend. There's also some fantastic racing action coming up at Del Mar this weekend, too. Today you have the Grade 1 Hollywood Derby, the Grade 2 Seabiscuit, and the Grade 3 Jimmy Durante. And tomorrow, the Grade 1 Matriarch and the Grade 3 Cecil B. DeMille. So a huge weekend where the turf meets the surf. And because I want to be sure that we get you ready for all of those stakes races later today and this weekend, we have broken out the segment from yesterday's Weekend Stakes Preview Show presented by Naira Betts, in which Bobby Newman and Bob Nastanovich provide an in-depth preview of all five of those greatest stakes at Del Mar this weekend. You will hear their analysis later in the first hour, and that comes up right around 8:40 Eastern following today's first bet. So there is a ton of insight into the weekend's major greatest stakes coming up in hour number one. Don't typically do a ton of handicapping on this show, as so many of you that tune in every Saturday morning will dabble in it. Last weekend, Ron Nicoletti joined me. He walked through the big mandatory payout Rainbow Six at Gulfstream. But quite often we're talking with owners and trainers and breeders and jockeys to cover some of the major storylines. Today, I thought, hey, what the heck? So much big racing all over the country. Let's take a look at some handicapping in the first hour of the program. So all of that is part of a busy first hour of the show. I'm going to kick off the second hour at 9 o'clock with our industry star of the week presented by Stuart Morris. You're going to hear from trainer Lynn Kleberad. She is fresh off her leading trainer title at Prairie Meadows. And Lynn joined me for an hour-long conversation on this past Wednesday's edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. She is just fantastic, full of energy. She's been doing this since, 1987 is when she took out her trainer's license. And she has saddled well over 1,000 winners. I think she's closing in on 1,500 now. And it was a lot of fun to hear her story. She has made a name for herself as one of the perennial leading trainers at Oaklawn Park, in Oklahoma, in Iowa. And now you're going to get to hear an excerpt from that trainer talk show coming up at 9 Eastern, and a deserved industry star of the week. At 9:20, I welcome another very deserving guest to the show. That is Naira Paddock Judge Peter Fitzgerald, as he prepares to retire after a remarkable 40-year career working at the racetrack. Peter is going to be this week's unsung hero. That segment presented by Claiborne. And again, a very deserving unsung hero at that. His story is fantastic. So make sure you don't miss that at 9:20. This is also the time of year when so many stallion farms are busy recruiting mares and booking mares to breed to their stallions. And one of the best in the business for many, many years has been Adina Springs. And I'm going to welcome Adina's Dermot Carty to the program right around 9:40 Eastern time. The final hour includes In the Room with Sean Clancy at 10 Eastern. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. You won't want to miss that one. So plenty of content coming up over the course of the next 3 hours to get you ready to bet the races this weekend, to look at some of the top storylines in the sport, and recognize some individuals who do wonderful work, some behind the scenes, some more in the spotlight. But we're going to do all of that for you here over the course of the next 3 hours this morning. Question of the day, you can go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or if you're not a social media person, hey, trust me, that's cool, I get it. Email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. With the Derby Future Wager taking place this weekend, I want to hear from you. Tell us about the best Kentucky Derby future wager bet you've ever made. Tell us about the best Kentucky Derby future wager bet you've ever made. I told you were going to hear more from Bobby Newman, who hosts our Weekend Stakes Preview show every Friday here on the network. Bobby tells a great story about getting huge odds on Fusaichi Pegasus before he even debuted. And, of course, he would go on and win the Kentucky Derby. I want to say it was 125-1 or something like that that he got Fupeg before his first race. So tell us about the best Kentucky Derby future wager bet you have ever made. Tweet to us at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network, if you want to post it to our Facebook page, or you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Another very busy edition of the Equine Forum begins next, and it begins with Kevin Kirstein from Churchill Downs as he sat down with our Bobby Newman to look at the big races coming up later today here in the Bluegrass. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Riptide Rock flying down the outside. I think safe conduct narrowly from Riptide Rock and a photo in the Queen's Plate. And Raging Bull, that Dice K. Fukumoto stole this year's Rico Woodbine Mile with Town Cruise. Walton Street demolishes them, a big winner of the Patterson Canadian International.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
Get to know the men and women who make this sport go on Trainer Talk, presented by Facig Tipton. Mike Pena sits down with Hall of Famers, up-and-comers, and everyone in between with an intimate conversation that goes beyond the X's and O's. Hear their stories every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 219 XM 201 or streaming live at horseracingradio.net. It's the show that trainers listen to. Trainer Talk, presented by Facig Tipton, only on HRRN.
This is jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Super Saver now coming back to the field. Super Saver coming under a ride now with Activity Report towards his outside. Worldly is there in third. In fourth position now, Mr. Saturday Night, followed by Collide Valley towards the outside. Williams Kitten, then the Sky Has No Limit, who's looking for a seam, and he's running out of time because Super Saver has kicked again, and Super Saver has gone clear now by five lengths as they race inside the final 16th. Super Saver is out in front for Calvin Burrell, giving chase Williams Kitten, but the Kentucky Jockey Club goes to Super Saver, a third win in the race for Calvin Burrell. Williams Kitten was second, a break to Worldly in third, and back in fourth, Activity Report.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron in the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Mark Johnson with the call of the 2009 Kentucky Jockey Club. Who can forget that one? 12 years ago. Wow, 12 years since Super Saver won that race. We know what happened after that. He would come back and win the Kentucky Derby. Great call. And, you know, that racehorse, Super Saver, how good was he? I mean, he was fantastic, and a huge win there in the Kentucky Jockey Club. That is part of a stellar card on this Saturday at Churchill Downs, the Kentucky Jockey Club, the Grade 2 Goldenrod. You also have the Fern Creek, and you have the Lively Shively Stakes, and all of those coming up later today. Earlier, our Bobby Newman had a chance to visit with Kevin Kirstein, who works with Churchill Downs. He's in the publicity department, does a fantastic job keeping up with all the top horses. They talked about the two Grade 2 races today, but they talked about all four stakes races and took a look at each of them for you. This interview, by the way, presented by our friends at Jellyfish Water. Here it is, Kevin Kirstein with Bobby Newman.
Pleased to be joined now on HRRN by the publicity manager at Churchill Downs, Kevin Kirstein. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Bobby.
Looking forward to it. So a big weekend of racing. Oh, Thanksgiving week is always a big week at Churchill Downs, but four big stakes on the Saturday card, part of a 12-race program that begins at 1 p.m. Eastern time. The final four races on the card, races 9 through 12, make up the late pick four, and it's an all-stakes pick four. And we'd love your help on handicapping these races. So let's start with the ninth race, the Lively Shively for two-year-olds going 6.5 furlongs, $200,000 on the line. Nice field of eight set to go to post. And we start with the morning line favorite, number five, Tejano Twist, who's already had seven career starts for trainer Brett Calhoun.
Yeah, you know, this horse is pretty interesting because, you know, he was given that short price on the morning line and probably deservedly so after that last race. And you know, the Lively Shively is certainly an interesting race for Colts and Geldings here going 6.5 furlongs. Some of these, you know, trainers of two-year-olds always aspire to have the Derby dreams. They stretch them out sort of like, you know, horses like Triple Tap, who finally cut back the other week down at Del Mar and showed that they like this cutback distance better. And I think this new addition from the racing office in the Lively Shively is sort of showing the trainers that maybe these horses are best going the one-turn distance. And you know, Tejano Twist was very impressive last time out, but he's going to have to contend with a duo of Steve Asmussen trainees in here and Cool Papa G and Chad a lot. And I think the Steve Asmussen barn, who we saw a little cold in Kentucky in September and October, is really starting to turn around things here in November. He won five races on Thursday's program at Churchill Downs, broke his own record of four races. And so I think, you know, the Steve Asmussen trainees of Cool Papa G and Chad a lot are going to give Tejano Twist a certainly a run for his money in the Lively Shively.
Cool Papa G, program number two. Chatalot, program number three. 5-1 and 7-2, respectively, on the morning line. Speaking about Chatalot, he's part-owned by one of our colleagues, Jeff Bloom, in Bloom Racing Stable. Very impressive first two starts of his career at Saratoga and at Churchill. Then caught a sloppy track last time out in the Bowman Mill over at Keeneland and didn't fire his best shot. He didn't run a bad race that day, but he finished third, kind of a non-contending third at the wire, showing speed and fading badly. Do you think the wet racetrack had something to do with that?
You know, you probably have to say so. And the good news is he won't have to face a wet racetrack tomorrow. The sun is shining here in Kentucky. It is cold, and we did have a lot of moisture in the racetrack over the last couple of days, but that looks to be sort of fading away. And, you know, if you're handicapping the weather, it'll probably be a fast track by, you know, Friday afternoon here at Churchill. And so I'd say by the race time tomorrow, it'll be a very fair racetrack. So almost have to give a, you know, draw a line through that race because maybe just didn't handle the slop that day.
Race 10 today at Churchill is the Grade 2 $400,000 guaranteed Goldenrod for two-year-old fillies going a mile and a 16th on the main track. Nice field of eight here, but one filly who really stepped her game up last time out, number four, Sandstone, who just blew away the field in the Rags to Riches.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's, you know, it's with Sandstone being 8-5 on the line and Famed being the, you know, slight second choice, I think these two are going to duke it out for favoritism coming in this race. You know, last time out with Sandstone just being, you know, ultra impressive, winning by more than 10 lengths here in the local prep for the Goldenrod, which is a race on the road to the Kentucky Oaks, awards the top four finishers 10-4-2-1 points respectively for the road to the Kentucky Oaks. And, you know, I don't know, you know, what she necessarily beat last time out. You see Yagiri, who is also in this field, who was well-touted breaking her maiden and then came back, was actually favored last time out against Sandstone. And, you know, she almost acts like a horse that maybe wants to cut back to the one turn in distance, going two turns again in the Kentucky Jockey Club. So I don't know, or in the Goldenrod. So I don't really know what she faced in there. But, you know, the well-touted famed for Brad Cox is going to get a lot of attention just because of the pedigree, being the half-sister to Essential Quality. The one thing that's interesting to me from gambling on this race is drawing the rail post position. So, you know, it's never necessarily the best spot to be for a young two-year-old filly, but she is making her third start. She did get a lot of experience out of her debut when she finished second and, you know, sort of was a walkover last time out when she won at Keeneland. So the only thing, you know, gambling-wise for me is, you know, that's giving me a little bit of a question mark in this race is breaking from the rail. But I do think that she's going to be the one to beat. I'm playing a little bit against Sandstone. I probably will include her in my exotics, but just not sure how strong the race was last time out. So, you know, famed, I wouldn't be surprised if she goes favored in here, Bobby, even though she's the second choice on the morning line just because of that well-touted pedigree and the buzz that I seem to be seeing about her on social media.
And she was able to win from the inside post last time, going that difficult about 7 furlong distance over at Keeneland against a big field of 10 other runners. So now going from the long run in the inside post to the turn and to the short run to the turn going 1 1/16 may actually help her chances. So Kevin going with number one famed, and I wouldn't call it an upset, but minor upset because Sandstone is the morning line favorite and coming off those back-to-back resounding wins going into the Goldenrod as race number 10. The 11th race on the card is the Grade 2 $400,000 Kentucky Jockey Club Stakes. The two-year-olds, the males here, going 1 1/16 on the main track. And we've got a big field of 14 set to go to post, Kevin. And another one who drew the rail that looks to have a big shot in Brian Lynch's Classic Causeway.
Yeah, absolutely. Draws the polar opposite of what we saw last time out in the Breeders' Futurity for Classic Causeway, who was parked way out in post 13. Had to be sent out of there pretty hard in the Breeders' Futurity just to get position going into that first turn. And so the one interesting thing about Classic Causeway, now drawing the inside, and he's been training behind horses working in the morning. So Brian Lynch has tried to get some different tactics into this horse in the mornings. He was wasn't really well-touted at Saratoga, but he came out of a well-touted race. He was 13-1 that day, and there was a lot of buzz on several other runners in that race and almost went forgotten in the wagering, and he popped up to win first out and then came back in the Breeders' Futurity, who went favored in that race at 9-5 and you know, finished third that day. And it was interesting hearing Brian Lynch's comments about how Rattle Roll won that race, but when the horses that were on the lead that day or close to the lead, he was one of the ones that sort of fought on and still ran third that day. So I think he got a lot of experience out of that race, and the interesting thing was him training behind horses leading into this Kentucky Jockey Club, acting like maybe he doesn't have to show that speed and probably is going to be better, you know, even though he did draw the rail, he's probably not going to maybe show that early foot out of the gate. And so Joel Rosario will have to find some room heading in to the final turn, as he's probably going to be behind a few horses. Howling Time is probably one that will likely to take play for Dale Romans and Joe Talamo, who won the Street Sense last time out in impressive fashion at Churchill Downs. This horse is, you know, one of the horses that almost went forgotten for Dale Romans at the Keeneland September sale. He was in book 4, I believe, at the Keeneland September sale. And so usually Dale Romans and the Oddball Stables do all their shopping in the first couple of books. And they, you know, saw this Son of Not This Time, who Dale Romans trained, that was going later in the sale. And they almost didn't get this horse in their barn. And then they tried to actually pinhook him and sell him at a two-year-old sale. Ended up being a late scratch out of that sale and turned out to be a pretty good racehorse for Dale Romans. Personally, for me, I'm going with the horse that's shipping in from Florida in White Abario for Safi Joseph and Edgar Zayas. I think this horse was very impressive down there in his last couple of starts. Didn't really face sort of the competition that a lot of these horses are facing, but I think the price will be right on this horse. It's a very competitive edition of the Jockey Club with Classic Causeway, with Howling Time, with White Abario, and, you know, Tis the Bomb for Kenny McPeak, Smile Happy for Kenny McPeak. It's going to be a very wide open betting board into this race. And so if you can make a stand, I think, in this late pick 4 sequence or the late pick 5, it's really going to pay dividends if you're spreading in some of the other races. So White Abario, I think, you know, even though he didn't face the classy type of horses that some of these others have faced, I think the price will be right on him. And he was certainly very impressive in those two starts.
Yeah, it looks like a great field later on for the Kentucky Jockey Club. Big field of 14 set to go the mile in a 16th. Final race on the Saturday card is the $200,000 Fern Creek Stakes for the two-year-old fillies sprinting 6.5 furlongs on the main track. We've got a field of eight and a very evenly matched field of eight. Some really good-looking fillies going into this race. Matarea has been great. Marissa's Lady was great in her debut. Sweet Danny Girl has done nothing wrong. Where'd you end up here?
You know, Sweet Danny Girl is undefeated and the morning line favorite for Carlo Vacarezza, who beat Famed in her debut at 45-1 and then came back and won the stake at Keeneland last time out. And so she'll probably take attention in the betting board. And you mentioned Marissa's Lady for Billy Morey, who was very impressive too. And I think she's coming into this race the best as she can be. But I think Matarea for Brad Cox, who is making the cut back in distance, I think will run her best effort with Joel Rosario getting aboard for the Cox team. He has another one in here in Golden Sights. But I think Matarea, you know, the cut back is, you know, probably going to suit her better going to 6.5 today. Maybe, you know, eventually down the road when she turns three, she'll stretch back out in distance. But I think she should relish the 6.5 furlongs this afternoon. And, you know, I think Sweet Danny Girl will be favored, so maybe you'll get a little bit of that morning line price on Matarea come post time for the Fern Creek at 6:24 Eastern.
And Matarea 7-2 on the morning line. Once again, race 12 on the 12 race card, 6:24 Eastern time. A big 12 race card on the Saturday Churchill docket. Kevin Kirstein, the publicity manager at Churchill Downs, thank you so much for taking the time, and best of luck on your wagers today.
Thanks, Bobby. Really appreciate you for having me.
I told you Kevin was on top of things. My thanks to Kevin and to Bobby for putting that interview together. And for all of you playing the races at Churchill today, good luck. That interview, by the way, brought to you by Jellyfish Water. Whatever your day brings, at the track or in life, reach for a bottle of Jellyfish Water to refresh, reset, and rejoice. Jellyfish Water is the start of a new day, the recovery from a long day, and the mindset to succeed every day. Life begins with water. Success begins with you. You can find your case of inspiration at jellyfishwater.com. Up next, it's time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington. When I come back, it's time for today's first bet and a look at the big races coming up at Del Mar, both today and tomorrow. That's right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
Racing for his breeder, Mrs. Phipps Wheatley Sable, this horse won the juvenile, youthful, and the futurity as a two-year-old. At three, he was horse of the year after chalking up scores in the Flamingo, Wood Memorial, Preakness, Bahamas, Trenton, Queens County, Vosburgh, and Benjamin Franklin handicaps. He equaled a track record in the Bahamas in going the seven-panel distance in 1:22 flat. He set a new track record in winning the Vosburgh 7 furlongs in 1:21 and 4, a new track record for 9 furlongs in copping the Flamingo in 1:47 flat, and went the same distance in nailing down the Wood in 1:48 and 4. As a three-year-old, are you listening out there, horseman? He was asked to shoulder 136 pounds in winning the Ben Franklin. He packed 130 in the Vosburgh, the highest weight ever shouldered by a three-year-old in that event. At the age of four, he won the Toboggan under 133 pounds, the Carter under 135, the Stymie packing 133, and the Suburban and the Monmouth toting 134 pounds. When he hung up his running shoes, as it were, he had started 33 times and had won 23 with 4 seconds and 2/3. He became the leading sire with only two crops of racing age in 1963, and his stud services very quickly rose to the level of almost being beyond affordability. His reign as leading North American sire for seven consecutive seasons was not only heretofore unmatched, but not even remotely approached at that time in the 20th century. Bull Lee and Lexington had stood alone in their time, but this horse literally dwarfed all his competitors in the breeding shed in terms of successive progeny on the racetrack. There was a question raised from time to time regarding his ability to impart stamina to his get, although he had won in the 1 3/16 mile Preakness and then 1 1/4 mile Trenton, Suburban, and Monmouth handicaps. The vast majority of his get exhibited blazing speed on the racetrack. There were a number of his get, however, that could be classified as stayers, including among those would be Lamb Chop, Vauteur, Bull Bitter, Stahanas, Bull Dower, Dewan, Successor, and Gamely, just to name a few. They were all winners in stakes company at 1 1/4 miles or better. He was a leading sire of two-year-olds for five seasons, three of those consecutively. The uninterrupted eight-year reign at stud for this horse, and 12 years in all, including that of his sire Nazrella, is a record to this day for a father-son combination. His progeny often did not have extended racing careers. They were too valuable at stud. Just hearken to this list in addition to those already mentioned, and really, time precludes doing too justice to this prodigious and lengthy compilation. Bull Commander, Bull Princess, Speedwell, Bull Queen, Beautiful Day, Chieftain, Bull Lad, Time for Bed, Cornish Prince, Bold Experience, Jacinto, Staunchness, Jove, Bold Nesian, Queen Empress, Great Power, My Boss Lady, Disciplinarian, Master Bull, What a Pleasure, Big Advance, Virginia Delegate, Irish Castle, Raja Baba, Plum Bold, and on, in a word, absolutely awesome. This particular titan of the turf was foaled at Claiborne April 6, 1954, and that was a most noteworthy indeed day for that farm and racing as a whole. You see, 1/2 hour after this foal was dropped, another foal was brought into the racing world who in time on the racetrack became the world's leading money winner, Round Table. The marvelous thoroughbred that has been the subject of this dissertation went his way to the great paddock in the sky, July 12, 1971, and with him went a remarkable record on the racetrack and in the breeding shed. He was Bold Ruler.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Live racing is back at Churchill Downs October 31st through November 28th with the same strong purses we've had all year, and you are not going to want to miss it. Highlighted by the graded stakes such as the Grade 3 Chalukie, the Grade 2 Falls City, Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club, and the Grade 2 Goldenrod, along with the Grade 1 Clark, this November meet is sure to be full of excitement. For more racing information and to get your tickets today, visit ChurchillDowns.com. That's ChurchillDowns.com.
If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
Broom and Yabir down to the wire. It is Yabir and William Buick to win the turf. Here comes Dunbar Road. They're coming to the wire. And it is, oh, it's desperately close. Was it Marsh Lorraine or was it Dunbar Road? Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, Essential Quality. Knicks go, a superstar. The Breeders' Cup Classic.
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Money still a length in front of Cowboy Cal in second. Dixie Chatter is third. Sailor's Cap, Gio Ponte, Midships is five wide. Alparian, they run to the top of the stretch, and here's Cowboy Cal to challenge Money. Albari's down at the rail. Dixie Chatter could also get through. Here's Dixie Chatter. Money is confronted from the back of the pack. Here comes a flying Court Vision. He was last at the quarter pole, and Court Vision's going to run by a mile and run to Harold Adouray. What a giant stretch run for Court Vision. He won by a length. Cowboy Cal was second, close for third between Midships and Dixie Cheddar.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch. That was Vic Stauffer with the call of the 2008 running of the Hollywood Derby. Court Vision uncorking a powerful late rally. It was incredible to watch him fly home. And when he was on his A game, that was his running style that suited him best. And he could really explode in the final furlong. He did it that day under Hall of Famer Ramon Dominguez. And who can forget? Remember, Court Vision in 2008, when he won that race, was trained by Hall of Famer Bill Mott. 3 years later, when he would upset the Breeders' Cup Mile at Churchill Downs at odds of 64-1, he was trained by Dale Romans. And Dale is somebody you're going to hear more from later in the program with I Ask, They Answer. That comes up at 10:30 Eastern. Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin sharing their thoughts on some of the hottest topics in the industry today. But up next, it is time for today's First Bet, presented by our friends at First Bet. That will be followed by Bobby Newman and Bob Nastanovich, who took a look at all the big races coming up at Del Mar this weekend. They did that on our Weekend Stakes preview show yesterday afternoon, and you'll get a chance to hear that analysis coming up right after today's First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of you playing the races around the country today, including that First Bet that you just heard. Many of you will be focused on Del Mar because they have a stellar weekend. I touched on it at the top of the show. You have the Grade 1 Hollywood Derby, the Grade 2 Seabiscuit, and the Grade 3 Jimmy Durante Stakes coming up later today. Tomorrow, the Grade 1 Matriarch and the Grade 3 Cecil B. DeMille Stakes. And yesterday, on our Weekend Stakes preview show presented by Naira Betts, which, by the way, you can hear the entire one-hour podcast on our website now at horseracingradio.net. Bobby Newman was joined by Bob Nastanovich, and they took a look at all five of those greatest stakes at Del Mar later today and tomorrow. And here's their analysis of each of them.
We're going to fly out west for some sunshine. Del Mar, California, three stakes on the Saturday card. And the fifth race is the $250,000 Grade 2 Seabiscuit Handicap, rather. Three-year-olds and up. They're going a mile and a 16th on the turf. We've got a field of seven, Bob. And the morning line favorite is a shipper for trainer Chad Brown and number seven, Sacred Life.
Yeah, both Ortiz brothers, they show up at Del Mar on Saturday. I think that's kind of interesting. Obviously, that they like the fun and the sun as well. A lot was made of Chad Brown having a frustrating Breeders' Cup. As you can see, he had no winners that weekend with 3 seconds. Last year, Sacred Life ran a really nice race in this exact event, splitting two really nice California horses, Neckshares and River Boyne. He's got a great turn of foot. He's got the key thing here is he's got plenty of his pace to his inside. And all that, I think that Majestic Eagle will get a piece of this at a big price. He's only 3 for 32, and I really think Sacred Life will make amends.
I think Sacred Life will make amends as well. Liked his race in the Knickerbocker last time out, coming from well off of it under Jose Ortiz, who was once again aboard this time, and also gets a turf course that more often than not is very friendly to horses who come from off the pace. And we'll see if that happens once again in the Seabiscuit Race 5 tomorrow at Del Mar, the first of three stakes on the Saturday Del Mar card. The next of the Del Mar stakes goes as race number 7. It's the Grade 3 $100,000 Jimmy Durante Stakes. These are two-year-old fillies going to go a mile on the turf. And we've got a field of 11 here, Bob, and really several ways you can go in this spot. The morning line favorite is way out on the outside, number 11, Helen's Well, for Phil D'Amato and Umberto Rispoli. And she's been running well of late, but she hasn't seen the winner's circle since she got her maiden win several months ago.
Yeah, this is a wide-open group to me. I don't make too much of the fact that the five horse, my selection, Travel Smart, ran for, you know, for a maiden 50 tag last time. She cost $57,000 as a two-year-old. They probably decided to take the risk, run her for 50 after she ran fifth to a highly regarded Baffert filly called Grace Adler in her first start at Del Mar. And she ran a really impressive race on the San Anita Turf for maiden 50, winning by a length and a quarter under Flavian Pratt, who stays on board. And he is, of course, the current king of the Del Mar Turf course. So I went with the 6-1 morning line, Peter Miller, Flavian Pratt production, Travel Smart.
Peter Miller actually going to send out several runners in this race. I believe he's got three in the race. He has number 3, Tesere, number 5, Travel Smart, number 6, Liam's Dove. And, of course, this is one of the final days, at least for now, in the training career of Peter Miller. It was announced about a week ago by Pete Miller himself that he's taking a break. He didn't say he's quitting. He just said he's done for a while, and we don't know what time frame that is, if he'll come back, and if so, when that will be. But it sounds like November 29th is going to be his final day as a trainer, which, of course, is this coming Monday, and looking to go out with a bang, as it were, with several runners all weekend at Del Mar. I also like Peter Miller to win this race, but not with number 5, Travel Smart. I went to number 3, Tesere, who looks so good earlier in the week on Breeders' Cup week. Irad Ortiz, who was out in Southern California that entire week, rode several horses on the Wednesday and Thursday cards at Del Mar, and he rode Tesere to victory on that Thursday card at Del Mar, getting the maiden win from well off the pace to win by just about a length, and it really didn't even have the cleanest of trips that day. I like the fact that Irad is aboard once again, and although Tesere is just coming off that maiden win, I don't see any reason that she can't be a major player once again in here. It is an evenly matched field in the Jimmy Durante. I don't think, you know, from what I've seen, Bob, I don't think there are any gorillas so far in this race. Nobody that you say, well, this one is the one they all have to beat. It looks like they're all just kind of trying to make a name for themselves.
Same. Yeah, couldn't agree with you more.
Okay, so Peter Miller, we like Peter Miller to win the race. I went with number 3, Tesere. Bob going with number 5, Travel Smart, in the Grade 3 Jimmy Durante Race 7 tomorrow over at Del Mar. Ninth race on the Del Mar card tomorrow is the Grade 1 $400,000 Hollywood Derby. Three-year-olds going a mile and an eighth on the turf. And before we get into it, by the way, there is a full field of 14 for this race. I love the fact that Del Mar continued the tradition of so many of these old Hollywood Park stakes that used to run during the fall meet at Hollywood Park, and especially during what they used to call the Autumn Turf Festival, which was always right around Thanksgiving time at Hollywood, whether it was the Hollywood Turf Cup, the Hollywood Derby, the Matriarch, you know, a lot of those big stakes that were, you know, so popular for many, many years were picked up and really didn't lose a step moving down to Del Mar. And kudos to Del Mar and everything they've done for maintaining everything with these old, very famous and very fun Hollywood Park stakes. And the Hollywood Derby is certainly one that's right there at the top of the list. A full field of 14 to go to post, Bob. And morning line favorite is actually 4-1. We heard the call of Subconscious winning the Twilight Derby in his last start for Dick Mandela and Juan Hernandez. That was actually the third win in a row for the son of Tappet. He broke his maiden 3 starts back. He beat Allowance Folks two starts ago and then stepped up against Great Stakes competition and won very impressively last time out. He's certainly one of the ones, again, doesn't have the greatest of post positions.
Yeah, I like the 7 in here. Flashiest is going to be a price. Flashiest has really never run a bad race in his 7 race career. He made the trip to Saratoga. That's the race that you can completely put a line through. Not only did he ship, of course, but he just had a horrendous journey around the first turn. Other than that, he's been excellent. I think Del Mar's his favorite track. He won the Oceanside this summer. If you watch the key race replay of the Twilight Derby, where so many of these competed, he had a pretty difficult trip, gave up a lot of ground, and was still running on, only got beat 2 3/4. I think he makes up that margin at a big price.
All right, so big price here on number 7, Flashiest for Leonard Powell, and Abel Cedillo for Bob in the Hollywood Derby. By the way, I misspoke earlier, mentioned that Subconscious was the morning line favorite. He's actually the second choice on the morning line. Chad Brown's Public Sector, who is riding a three-race win streak of his own, is the morning line favorite. And all three of his wins, Bob, were against graded stakes competition out east. It's very logical that he would be favored in this spot.
I would think so, yeah, making the journey. And I think that they, you know, he's pretty highly regarded.
Very highly regarded, and he's never he's actually only run poorly once in his nine-start career, and unfortunately it was in the biggest race of his life, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last year over at Keeneland, and since he was off for about 5 or 6 months after that, presumably something happened to him in the race, but all of his other eight starts were very, very good efforts, and he's a logical favorite in this spot. That being said, you picked a 15-1 morning line shot on top. I'm also going to go with a 15-1 morning line shot on top with number four, Team Merchants, for Doug O'Neill and Mario Gutierrez. Mario Gutierrez does not ride a lot other than for people named Doug O'Neill, but he rides First Call for Doug O'Neill, rides a lot of his good horses, and has done so for many, many years. And he rode Team Merchants last time out to victory in the Let It Ride Stakes at Del Mar, also during Breeders' Cup week. It was on the Thursday of Breeders' Cup week. He came from off the pace to win going away. Nice final time of 1:34.2, and really turned around from what he had done in his lone turf start before that, where he stumbled badly in an allowance sprint at Santa Anita several months before. It looks to me like Team Merchants may actually be a turf horse, and I think the effort he put forth in that restricted Let It Ride Stakes is good enough to make him a major player in this. I really don't even think he needs to improve off that race to have a big chance in this race. I think the reason that he's a big price on the morning line is, one, he's ridden by Mario Gutierrez, who, let's face it, is not the name of Irad Ortiz or Mike Smith or some of these other billboard names. And two, he is coming out of a restricted stake where some of these others are coming out of graded stakes where they actually won the graded stake. So through no fault of Team Merchants of his own, he's a long shot in here. I don't think he should be a long shot. 15-1 is a gift. I think he's got a big chance. Bob and I both trying to light up the board in the Grade 1 Hollywood Derby, race 9 tomorrow at Del Mar. I went with number 14, Merchants. Bob going with number 7, Flashiest. They're both 15-1 on the morning line. And all I can say, pal, is good luck to both of us with these long shots.
Well, we'll need it.
Yeah, and you know what? It's not like we're trying to beat favorites that look iffy. The favorites look very solid in this race. Public Sector almost never runs a bad race. Subconscious is in great form right now. I think we just both think there's reasons that our long shot selections can run as well as them or maybe better than they've been running in the past.
Yeah, course form is a valuable asset at Del Mar, and we took, you know, two horses here that have an affinity for the surface there at Del Mar. It's a unique one, and hopefully we'll pull off a good number.
They've got two big stakes on the Sunday card, starting with race number 3, the Grade 3 $100,000 Cecil B. DeMille Stakes. These are two-year-olds going a mile on the turf. We've got a big field of 11 here. Bob, where'd you end up?
These are the boys, and I could not have been more impressed with the 10-horse Verbal, the Judmont Farms homebred trained by Chad Brown, who makes the trip from Belmont out to Del Mar. And in a similar fashion to Howling Time, he just rolled home and really made short work of a group of maidens. The way he did it was visually impressive. He shows some decent workout since, makes the trip out there. I think he means business. My selection is number 10, Verbal.
I agree with everything you just said. I think Verbal is the one to beat. He also comes from off the pace in a race that looks like there's plenty of speed to his inside, and a turf course that has played well to closers throughout history, and this year included. So Verbal for Bob and myself in the Grade 3 Cecil B. DeMille Race 3 on the Sunday card. Want to give a shout-out also to number 1, Optimizing. He ran on the Future Stars Friday undercard, that Breeders' Cup Friday undercard in the Cotter Mile going at Del Mar and looked like he made a winning move and ended up second best. But I thought that was a good field that he faced that day. And he has a better post than Verbal. So it wouldn't be surprising to me if Optimizing ran another good race. But I agree with you, Bob. I think Verbal is a horse with a bright future, and I'm going to put him on top as well. Let's jump forward to race 7 on the Sunday card at Del Mar. This is the featured Grade 1 $400,000 Matriarch for the fillies and mares, going 1 mile on the turf. Strong field of 6 here, including the defending champ in Chad Brown's Viadera.
Yeah, you've made the point several times. So you don't like horses that run in the Breeders' Cup races and then come back in the following weeks to run in lesser spots. And I think it's a valid point. However, Princess Grace and Zofel, who ran on the Breeders' Cup undercard in the Grade 2 Gold Akova, they could have always had this race in mind, and I think that they both did. Princess Grace has been near flawless in her career. She finished second at Keeneland in the Valley View, and she finished third after reluctantly setting the pace on November 6th in the Gold Akova. It's kind of a similar story here today. This looks like a race where they're going to break from the gate, and it might be sort of a jockey's race to determine who's going to go to the front. I like the fact that Princess Grace has been there before, and I think that she makes amends in this selection. I think Princess Grace for DeSormo and Stidham get the job done.
Okay, so you're going with two fillies exiting the Grade 2 Gold Akova. I'm going to go with the two coming out of the Grade 1 First Lady at Keeneland on a good turf course in Viadera and Regal Glory. It's very hard for me to separate these two. I think they're both very capable. I would use them both. I'm going to put Viadera on top because I happen to believe that she is getting a gigantic rider change going from somebody else to a guy named Flavian Pratt. She actually has not gotten the best of trips in two of her last three starts. She lost both of those races, but I expect her to get a better trip with Pratt. She obviously likes the course. She's won over it in the past. I don't know that she's hands down better than Regal Glory if they both get good trips. I think they're about equal, so I'm going to use them both. But the rider change to Pratt is enough for me to put Viadera on top. Viadera for me, Princess Grace for Bob in the 7th race Sunday at Del Mar, the Grade 1 $400,000 Matriarch.
Well, there you have it. Good luck playing the races later today and tomorrow at Del Mar. When I come back, I will get you set for a loaded second hour of the program and tell you what's ahead in hour number 3 as well. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hi, this is Kelsey Grammer. When military service members head into battle, none are expected to face the enemy alone, but many return home and become isolated as they struggle with the visible and invisible wounds of war. It can be difficult knowing how to overcome that challenge and rekindle bonds similar to those formed in the military. Wounded Warrior Project supports these injured veterans through their recoveries by connecting them with fellow warriors and their communities. No one should fight this battle alone. Join us at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
I'm Nyheim Hines, professional football player for the Indianapolis Colts. Becoming a running back was no easy task for me, but it's nothing compared to what my amazing mom faces every day. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14 years old, yet she's always there for me, every step of the way, despite her own battles. And the Muscular Dystrophy Association is there for my mom. At their 150 care centers across the U.S., MDA is the leading organization in research and care for kids and adults with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and related neuromuscular diseases. Their research is helping find cures and save lives. Watching my mom go through her daily struggles and the care she receives from MDA has made me determined to help find a cure for neuromuscular disease. That is why I support MDA, and that's why I'm so grateful to others who do too. Join me and learn more at helpmda.org today.
Hey, this is Bobby Newman. Join me every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern for Race Day, presented by Twin Spires. We'll be discussing all of the important happenings in the world of horse racing, as well as covering great live racing from tracks like Belmont, Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Oaklawn, Churchill, Santa Anita, and Del Mar. That's Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 219, XM 201, and online at horseracingradio.net.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Ocean Breeze to the outside and Strong Flag. They hit the top of the stretch. Flat Out Speed is still there. Flat Out Speed has to hold on for a final 3/16ths and has the lead. Aurelia Garland is under a ride. Ocean Breeze is down the center. Ocean Breeze trying to catch Flat Out Speed. Flat Out Speed determined, still trying to hang on. Has to hang on for a final half a furlong. And Flat Out Speed is going to do it. Here's the Iowa bred. Flat Out Speed to win the Iowa Oaks.
Flat Out Speed did indeed win the Iowa Oaks. That was last year at Prairie Meadows. It is the lone graded stakes victory on the resume of trainer Lynn Kleberad. And Lynn took the time to join me on our Trainer Talk show for a full hour conversation. It was so much fun to welcome Lynn to the show last Wednesday night. And you're going to hear an excerpt from that show, as Lynn is our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris. That comes up at 9 Eastern. I just thought it was appropriate because here's a trainer who has dedicated her life to the sport of thoroughbred racing. And when you look at her resume, it's impressive. I mentioned that lone graded stakes victory, but let's face it. So many trainers in the sport have made a name for themselves and made a living in this game, working their tails off, having very limited success or opportunities in graded stakes company. Lynn has saddled stakes winners, but that's her only graded stakes winner. She has saddled 1,430-plus winners since taking out her trainer's license in 1987. So to say, yeah, she's had success in this game, she certainly has. If you look at the trainer standings in Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Iowa, for example, you're likely to find her name among the leaders year in and year out. She does a tremendous job, and I think you're really going to enjoy this Industry Star of the Week segment coming up. That will be followed by another segment that you will not want to miss. It is Unsung Heroes. It's presented by Claiborne. Comes up at 9:20 Eastern Time, right in that ballpark. And I'm going to welcome in Peter Fitzgerald, who is the longtime paddock judge at NYRA. He has spent 40 years working on the racetrack, and he will retire in early December. So that career coming to an end, you'll want to hear his story. That comes up at 9:20 Eastern Time. And then at 9:40, I welcome in Dermot Carty from Adena Springs to talk about everything that they have going on with Adena and their stallions, both here in the U.S. and north of the border in Canada. This is the time of year when stallion farms are looking to recruit mares to breed to their stallions. They're busy booking those mares, and Dermot will tell you all about that at the end of the second hour of the program. Of course, still ahead in hour three, you have In the Room with Sean Clancy, Kurt Becker stroll through racing history, and I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and with Tim Wilkin. Don't forget today's question of the day with the Kentucky Derby future wager pool kicking off for the first time pertaining to the 2022 Kentucky Derby. That's the first pool. It began on Thursday. It wraps up this weekend at Churchill Downs. The question I had was for you to tell us, well, not a question, but I want to hear from you. Tell us about the best Kentucky Derby future wager bet you've ever made. You can do that at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or if you want to email the show, you can email me directly, mike@horseracingradio.net, and tell us about the best Kentucky Derby future wager bet you have ever made. Now, don't forget, too, that hunting season in the bluegrass is in full swing. And I know there are so many people that love to get out in the woods, myself included. If you do, you'll want to check out Whitetail Heaven Outfitters and their elite outdoor superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. They are just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. They are owned, the store is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. So you go in, you talk some horses, you talk some hunting, some fishing, whatever it might be, and they will take care of you. The elite outdoor superstore has everything you need, from hunting deer, turkey, ducks, and so much more, and even 2 indoor archery ranges. So if you're an archer and you're looking for a new bow, looking to give it a test run, you can do it right there with their 2 indoor archery ranges. Again, it's the Elite Outdoor Superstore, the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. I'm back with hour number 2 right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back to hour number 2 of the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Rolling on this 27th day of November, 2021. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you back with me. And I've been telling you throughout the first hour of the program that this is a feast of greatest stakes coming up this weekend across the country, and so many racetracks getting in on the action. It is truly a coast-to-coast affair. If you missed any portion of the first hour of the program, our conversation with Kevin Kirstein from Churchill Downs, looking at their big races on their closing weekend. They have 4 stakes races coming up today. Kevin walked you through each of those with Bobby Newman in the first segment of the show. And then the conversation and the analysis from Bobby and from Bob Nastanovich, who walked through all of the greatest stakes coming up at Del Mar this weekend, both today and tomorrow. If you missed any of that, it's easy. All you have to do is, when we finish up here at 11 a.m. Eastern, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and there will be a podcast posted that you can listen to at your leisure and get a chance to catch up on some of that if you missed it. And get ready to bet the races later today, because it is a massive, massive weekend of thoroughbred racing coming up. All right, we're going to kick off this second hour of the program by bringing you our industry star of the week. And this segment each week is presented by our good friend Stuart Morris, who indeed offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. And he does want to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales, and we certainly encourage you to do so. This past Wednesday on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton, I spent an hour visiting with Prairie Meadows leading trainer Lynn Kleberad. And if you want to be inspired about the sport of thoroughbred racing, if you want to know what it feels like to truly be in love with the sport and in love with the horse, go back and listen to the full hour, because it was fantastic. Lynn is just full of energy. She's full of passion for the sport. She has trained more than 1,400 winners in her career. She thought at one point she was going to be an accountant years and years and years ago, and then the horses drew her back, and she came from the show horse world, got into thoroughbreds, and it's been just a magical ride for her. You heard the call leading into the end of the first hour, Flat Out Speed winning the Iowa Oaks. That was last year. That is the lone greatest stakes winner in more than 30 years of training for Lynn, and it came last year. And it was an emotional moment for her. And she got a chance to look back on that moment with me on Trainer Talk. She is this week's Industry Star of the Week. And here is that excerpt from the show.
Oh, you don't even know. Flat Out Speed was probably, obviously, my favorite. She produced the graded stakes win for me. And she was a difficult filly. She was real quirky. she liked Alex Contari, who rode her, and she liked me and her groom. And that was about all. She was a filly that she would just give her best, but she was so smart, and people, I mean, she was never supposed to run, from my understanding. I don't even know what the issues were, but she never had any problems when I had her, so I was glad. When you train for a breeder, which is Alan Poindexter, who raises, you know, obviously some of the best horses in the United States, and one horse in Canada was the went to Canada. I mean, I'm so thankful to get to raise, not raise, but train horses from the beginning. Like, they're brought to me after they're broke to ride, and then it's up to me to make them what they can be, bring out their best. And so Flat Out Speed, she was really, really strange. She was the kind of horse, like you say, well, this one takes a while. You got to get her to come to you. And so even today, she's in full. She's going to have a baby by not this time. If I would go there, I swear to you, she would run to me because she loved me. And I think sometimes horses run better because of their love for people, and she loved Alex Contari. I mean, there was just a special bond, I think, between, and I believe that horses can have bonds with people. I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah. Alex Contari was aboard for that win that day. It was, for all intents and purposes, a wire-to-wire win. She was up close early and then just drew off and had to hold on a little bit. She still won by a length and three quarters. As you were standing there, as you're cheering her on, put me there with you. What was the scene like, Lynn?
I go, I think she's going to do it. I think she's going to do it. And oh, you just get so excited, so excited. And I was like, come on, Warrior. I would get, like, it made a difference. And I go, come on, go. And when she won, I just was like, I just started bawling. I was just so, in fact, right now, it makes me cry, because to see an animal like that give so much heart and courage for all that she did, you know, a lot of people, they just think that it just happens. Well, it doesn't just happen. It happens, but it doesn't just happen. And it was the most exciting thing, probably one of the most exciting days of my life. I mean, that people, you know, get graded stakes win, you know, go to the Breeders' Cup, go to the Kentucky Derby, go to the Oaks, go do that. I mean, that's what people in this business dream about. And so for me to have the opportunity to train a filly like Flat Out Speed is just incredible. And the enjoyment that she gave to me, to Mr. Poindexter, to Alex, to the groom, all the people involved, the hot walkers. There's so many people that are involved. It isn't just me. It isn't the jockey. It takes a whole army to get a racehorse ready.
Yeah.
And all the people that were involved with her, you know, it's just there's nothing that you can say to make a person feel that how it makes you feel, how good it makes you feel, how proud for the horse it makes you feel. Proud. It makes you feel proud.
Yeah, they become like your children. So many trainers have told me that they really do. And you become like a proud parent when they do well. And a filly like this in Flat Out Speed, she retired with 8 wins from 9 lifetime starts. She was only beaten one time, and she earned more than $360,000 for her career. What separates, Lynn, a horse of this caliber from your average everyday horse that just isn't quite on that level?
Heart, desire. Of course, they have to have. It's just heart and desire. And I think that filly had all of that. She just had to try, just to try. If they don't, I've had horses that have ability, plenty of ability. But when it comes right down to it, is this kind of like people? Some people have plenty of ability, and they just don't give it. So when you have an animal like Flat Out Speed that wants to give you all she's got, I mean, that's, it's just amazing. It's just, you don't find that. I mean, people that give 110% every time you open the gate, you know, you have a few, but they're very far and few between, you know.
Yeah, they certainly are. Those horses that give you everything they have every time that you lead them over are very special. And Flat Out Speed, very special to this week's Industry Star of the Week, Lynn Kleberad. My thanks to her. And again, go back and listen to the entire program. 1 hour conversation with her. It was really, really inspirational and fantastic. It's posted on our website right now. Time for your KTA KTOB Spotlight, a Kentucky Bred update, if you will, brought to you by the KTA KTOB. The stars of tomorrow are absolutely bred in Kentucky. When it comes to two-year-old racing, Kentucky Breds are at the top of the class. Kentucky Breds have dominated the two-year-old stakes ranks in 2021, winning 45 of the 49 juvenile stakes races so far this year, including 30 of the 32 graded stakes and 11 of the 13 grade ones. And with purse money soaring at the state's five racetracks and maiden special weight purses up $35,000. That's exactly what they are right now in Kentucky. This is the place. Kentucky is the place with the most lucrative racing for all of your future stars. Kentucky Breds, breed them, race them, raise them. We all win. For more information about racing and breeding in Kentucky, all you have to do is visit KentuckyBreds.com. All right, when I come back, it is time for a very special edition, as they all are, of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. I welcome in longtime NYRA paddock judge, Peter Fitzgerald. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Champions are returning to Gulfstream for the championship meet starting December 3rd until April 3rd. Witness the best thoroughbred racing Wednesday through Sunday with weekly stakes races. Returning for its sixth year this January is the 2022 Pegasus World Cup with world-class racing, delectable cuisine, stunning celebrities, and iconic fashion. New for 2022 is the third graded stakes race, the Pegasus Turf for fillies and mares with a $500,000 purse. Tickets go on sale November 8th. Visit PegasusWorldCup.com to learn more and get tickets.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Off the far turn, and Maxfield strides forward and takes the lead by a length and a half. Two lengths in the final furlong. Gouverneur Moore is second and Forcible third. The rest are far back. Maxfield, a breathtaking run at the top of the stretch. Kicks clear by six. Maxfield to win the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity for Jose Ortiz.
Maxfield, boy, was that impressive. He showcased his talent and precociousness right away in his two-year-old season with that huge win in the Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity at Keeneland. The handsome Grade 1 winning two-year-old by Street Sense retires the stud for 2022 and will be available for viewing next week at John Abell Farm in Lexington, Kentucky. Learn more about Maxfield and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro. Known as a sire of big price sale horses, Medaglia d'Oro is out on his own with 27 figure yearlings since 2016. Learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019
Masters champion.
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to eight, three, two, one. And for the eighth time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Well, and no matter how involved you are with the sport of thoroughbred racing, no matter how much time you have spent around the racetrack or working in the industry, there is a pretty good chance you may never have heard the name Peter Fitzgerald, which is ironic because Peter has been around the racetrack in New York for 40 years, four decades, the past 20 working as a patrol judge and the paddock judge at the New York Racing Association tracks. It is a labor of love for Peter. And for me, as it is with every Unsung Hero segment, it is a true privilege to welcome Peter Fitzgerald as this week's Unsung Hero presented by Claiborne. Peter, welcome to the program, my friend.
Oh, Mike, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear your story. I mentioned those four decades working around the racetrack. That time is just about up. You're about ready to ride off into the sunset now and retire. I can only imagine that that's got to be kind of a set of mixed emotions for you at this point.
Mixed emotions got to be the understatement of the century. it's a funny feeling. It's a good feeling. It's something that you work all your life for, basically, no matter what business you're in. But it's a big part of your life, and just moving on to another area. It feels good. It's a little scary, and it's a very, very bittersweet moment. But it's time to go.
You are only 60 years old. You're still a relatively young man. Why is now the right time to say, okay, it's been a wonderful career, let's move on to the next chapter?
Okay, did you say 50 or 60? Because it's 68.
No, 68. Oh, 68.
68.
Oh, geez, I had you 8 years younger.
Well, that's okay. I'll take them, okay? Yeah. That's all right.
Why is this the right time, Peter?
I don't know. It's just, I don't know if there is a right time. It's just, it's just the way I feel. I'm healthy and everything seems to be good. So, enjoy it while I can. And it's time for let someone else to take the reins and go on. Okay. It's a younger generation coming in and doing it. And it's, like I said, pass the baton.
What's the one part of the job that you've enjoyed most?
That's an easy one. Basically, the people. I know that's a generic answer for everyone, but it is. And then, I mean, in every aspect of the game, I mean, from management level to the racing department, to security, and basically to the horsemen, the owners, the trainers, and even more the grooms and the exercise riders, the jockeys, the valets, everyone involved. It's almost like a circus, like a family. Everyone I've encountered throughout all these years, they've been absolutely fantastic, and in their way, they've taught me so much. And it's just really the joy of this sport. It's just the people that you deal with, the people who are involved. They're terrific.
Yeah, there's no place like the racetrack, right? And it's such a unique atmosphere. And I've said for years that there are more characters around the racetrack. And really, the racetrack itself has more character than so many other sporting venues that you'll attend. And it's really unique, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it is. I don't even know how to put it. But it's a great group of people. It's a great industry. It is. It's something you actually look forward to doing every day.
You know, Peter, I mentioned in the open to the segment, there are plenty of people that may have never heard your name, and there are plenty of people that might not even realize that your job around the racetrack exists, being a patrol judge and a paddock judge. So for those who might not know what that is, explain what you do.
Okay. First of all, patrol judge is almost an obsolete position now. Patrol judge was someone who would go onto a certain part of the racetrack, like at the wire or at the quarter pole, or at the half mile at start like that, and physically through binoculars watch the horses in their section, you know, and report any foul to like the stewards by radio or something like that. But that with the electronics, the television, and the closed circuit and like that, that's pretty much that part of the industry is kind of fading away. So basically, it's the paddock judge that I am now. And the paddock judge, very simply, is he runs the paddock. He's in, you know, everyone, of course, knows the paddocks where the horses come to get saddled for the race. And the paddock judge is pretty much in charge of everything. He's responsible for all that goes on in there. Wants to make sure that the horses arrive in a proper time, in a timely manner. Keeps a record of all their equipment, of what each individual horse runs in, okay, with sorts of blinkers and other types of nose bands, shadow rolls, and things like that. He wants to make sure that the trainers are consistent with them, okay? He keeps a record of them. Trainers have to be consistent in their equipment with horses, especially concerning blinkers, things like that. If he wants to make a change, he has to do that when he enters the horse, which is usually on generally about 3 days in advance. So that the betting public knows in advance when they're doing their handicapping what these horses are going to be running in. So I make sure that that's all taken care of and those rules are followed and enforced. And then just make sure that I confer with the horse identifier and with the blacksmith and make sure that everything conforms with them. The horse got proper shoes and of course the right horse comes to the paddock. That's the identifier and the blacksmith. We all work together on that. And, basically just get the riders, the crook scales, get the riders out after he checks their weights, he gets them out. We get the horses saddled and I get them off in a post parade in a timely manner, but basically just make sure that everything runs smoothly and accordingly. And, like I said, make sure that the rules are followed, which they always are, of course, and that the horses have the equipment that they're supposed to run in.
How often does it happen, Peter, where a horse comes into the paddock and something is not right? The equipment isn't exactly right, or there's something amiss, maybe an oversight with the horse's preparation. How often does something like that occur?
That happens quite often, okay? And again, I'm glad you keyed on the one word. It's an oversight. It's nothing, something that's intentionally being done. It's just a simple human error. And mostly that would be whether or not a horse wears blinkers, okay? It's just a matter of a confusion where they thought they had blinkers and they put blinkers on a horse. I said, no, this horse does not wear them. We took them off, or, you know, which is no big deal. Or vice versa, where they forgot the blinkers, or they don't fit properly, or they got damaged somehow. We have them in off there. I blinkers that they can wear. It happens often enough, but like I said, it's usually just an oversight, an honest error. It's very easily and instantly corrected. Okay. When the horses do leave the paddock to go out on the racetrack, they have what they're supposed to have.
Visiting with longtime NYRA paddock judge Peter Fitzgerald here on this edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. Peter has been on the job now for 40 years, not all of them as the paddock judge, certainly. I guess it's been about, what, 2 decades as the paddock judge, and before that you were doing some other duties. Walk me back through, Peter. Where did this journey start for you?
Where did it start? Well, the story I always tell that people always ask me was back in 1973, they had this horse called Secretariat, which I'm sure everyone heard of. That's the horse that got me interested in this game. I watched him run the Triple Crown. I was working in a liquor store in Freeport, Long Island, and I wanted to watch him run the Belmont Stakes. I brought a little TV into the liquor store and watched him win the Belmont Stakes, and that got me hooked. The next year I was working on the racetrack. I was working with security, Pinkerton Security. I got a job doing that. And after a couple of years doing that, Dr. Manny Gilman, who was the chief examining veterinarian at the time, asked me if I wanted to join in his department to work in horse ID. I did as a clerk, and I moved my way learning that part of the business, and eventually became the horse identifier. After that, I went into the racing office doing other different things, kind of like a what they call the utility official, where you kind of went where you were needed. I would be working in the paddock with the paddock judge at the time, or I'd be a placing judge up in the placing stand, or working in the jocks room with the clerk of scales, just rotating around, learning different things, and finally moved on to become the paddock judge. And then about 1995, I went to Delaware for 11 years, where I was the paddock judge there. And in 2006, I came back to New York and resumed those duties here.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to get away from the Big Apple, right? It just kind of brings you back in.
Yeah, yeah, it's my home. It was I was glad to be able to come back.
Yeah. Do you have a couple funny stories that you like to tell about things that have happened over the years with horses or connections that come into the paddock, maybe some bizarre occurrences that have taken place?
Okay, I can think of one that comes to mind right now. It happened at Delaware where I was when I was paddock judge. It was a horse. I won't mention any names. Doesn't really matter. But there was a horse who was the most ornery son of a bitch. Tough getting saddled. And when we put the riders up to go out, when I gave the riders up call to go, he was like the seven horse. It was like a seven horse field. I don't know the exact number, but he was the outside horse. He was the last horse. He was a number seven or number eight horse, whatever it was. And he just flat out refused. Rider up and everybody's in the paddock, and the horse just flat out refused. I mean, he pulled on him with the pony, without the pony. This horse just would not budge. Rider on, rider off, would not budge. And one of the outriders finally got him to go. And I said, oh, damn, this horse. I got to do something about this horse. You know, I'm going to have to put him on my list to get him properly schooled and everything like that. We get him out on the racetrack. He would not load into the gate. Just again, flat out refused. All the others were loaded. He would not load. He dropped the rider and took off and then walked into the gate all by himself. And I said, I can't believe this, you know. I said, I thought maybe the starter's going to put him on the starter list. I'm going, great, great. We'll never see this one again. Walked into the gate, put the rider up, and off they went. He didn't run all that well, but, I mean, he got off great. It was the funniest thing. That I guess, would be the funny story.
Yeah, incredible.
The one that sticks in my head the most, and I'll carry this one to my grave, it was a young rider, woman rider at Belmont. I was on the inner turf course at Belmont, and this is when we had patrol judges too. I was standing at the tower at the wire. Okay, these horses came around the stretch. Okay, and to the top of the stretch, and her horse just ducked in, hit the rail, inside rail, unseated her. She hit the rail with her back, and then fell flat on her face on the turf course. The horse was fine. The horse ran off with the others. The outrider caught him after the race, okay, and the other horses went fine. She laid there motionless, okay. The EMTs got on the scene immediately. I got down from the tower, and I just stood there. And she's, you know, more than an eighth of a mile away, but she just laid motionless and had no idea how bad it is. And it's dead silence in the grandstand. And then she suddenly started to move on her own. And all of a sudden, people in the grandstand, they started to clap. And then when she sat up, the clapping got louder. And when she stood up on her own, they started yelling and cheering for her. And that yelling and cheering and clapping went from the top of the stretch all the way down the apron, across the wire, into the clubhouse of fans just clapping and cheering that she got up on her own and she was okay. And that just made me feel so good. And because, well, you know, every fan, every bettor is going to get mad at a rider, you know, saying that you stiffed them, you know, that you didn't ride well, I lost a lot of money on you, and everything like that, and they'll curse them out as they're walking from the scale. But here's a case where they know these are real people, okay? They're doing their best. It's a dangerous job. They have families just like everyone else, and, you know, they do have a heart, and the fans do appreciate that, and they do know that when something like that happens, they do know. And that just made me feel really, really well. And I'll never forget that image.
Yeah, what a great story and so positive. And Peter, you said a little while ago that you were working at a liquor store before you got your first job on the racetrack, started working in security, and things have gone from there. Could you ever imagine at that point that this would have been a four-decade-long career?
Absolutely not. I just fell in love with it right away, and it just got better and better as the days went on.
You mentioned the people, and I know you're going to miss the people a lot. What other parts of the job will you miss?
Well, basically the job itself. I just like, you know, being busy and being outdoors is one of the greatest things. You know, I just, you know, work in the office in the morning there, but then when the races start, it's just being outdoors. And it doesn't matter what the weather is. It could be hot, it could be cold, it could be raining, snowing, blistering. It doesn't matter. I like being outside and that's a great part of the job too. But the interaction with all the people, with the horses, and including the fans, you know, it's especially up in Saratoga where you get to really talk to the fans and everything like that. It was kind of funny a year ago, not this past me, but a year ago with the COVID where the fans weren't allowed. It was kind of a funny feeling, but the fans are great, and I like interacting with them when I can.
Yeah, and Peter, I keep saying 40 years. I guess now it's closer to 50 years that you've been on the racetrack and doing your thing. And I know that there are so many people that will miss you when the time comes here in a couple of weeks to finally say, okay, it's done and we're going to move on. And I think that that has to mean a lot to you, too, that people are going to remember you and remember all the hard work and the sacrifices and the dedication that you gave to the sport, too.
Yeah, well, it does. It means a great lot. And like I said, that's what makes it difficult to leave. There's a large part of me that says, don't do this. You don't want to go. You want to stay. You want to be with these people. And I do. But then there's the other part that's a little more reality. It's like I said, it's just time to move on. But I'll be around. I'm not going anywhere. Everyone said, you're going to Florida? No, I'm not going to Florida. You're going to go out west? I'm not going out west. No, I'm going to stay right here in New York. I'm going to relax for a little while throughout the winter, see what happens in the springtime, but I'm not going anywhere. I'll be around.
You know, I was thinking back as you were talking about Secretariat, too, and how that was the horse that really drew you into the sport. And then you were making your living in the sport. You were working on the track every day, working in New York. And we had that huge gap from Affirmed to American Pharoah. And so many people were beginning to wonder if we were ever going to see another Triple Crown winner. Were you among them? Were you beginning to doubt that you might never see one again?
No, it's like I think the thing about the Triple Crown is people, have to understand that, that's not an easy task to accomplish. That's a very tough campaign in the amount of time, for a horse to go through. Before Secretariat, Citation back in 1946, before Secretariat won it again. And then you had Seattle Sioux and the Affirmed and Aladar. So you had three Triple Crowns almost right in a row, within a 5-year period. That's actually when I thought, wow, this is starting to get routine. And then after that, it wasn't too like American Pharoah. So it was like, that long span, it does prove that this is quite an accomplishment to do this. This is quite a campaign for a horse to accomplish those three things in such a short period of time.
What did American Pharoah's Triple Crown look like from your vantage point where you were that day?
That's when we were still doing patrolling. I was at the tower, on the tower at the wire on the inside rail. I think the most exciting thing like that, especially that with that one, but every Belmont Stakes, I think the exciting thing is to hear the crowd. Because when they're behind the gate, the momentum is starting and everything, and when they're finally loaded, the crowd gets just their noise and sound. And when they spring from the gate, just that roar and that cheer is the exciting thing. And when you see this horse coming down the stretch and you know he's got it, it's like, and you hear the crowd, that's the exciting thing. And it's kind of a funny vantage point where I was at the time, because you're not looking at it, like a pan shot. They're coming straight towards you, it's an awesome feeling.
And Peter Fitzgerald, ladies and gentlemen, this week's Unsung Hero, this segment presented by Claiborne, and nobody more deserving. Peter, it's been a wonderful career for you. I wish you all the best in the next chapter of your life and in your retirement. Enjoy it, and I can tell you, you will be missed.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to miss everyone else, too. And like I've been telling everyone, I appreciate everything that everyone has done for me, how much they've befriended me, and how much they have taught me. Because there's one thing I've learned, and it's not just in horse racing, you never stop learning. You're always learning something new every day. But I've enjoyed it. It has been a great ride.
Well, Peter, you're a gentleman, and all the best moving forward, my friend.
Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate it so much, and thanks for having me.
All right, Peter Fitzgerald, and I tell you every week, it is a true privilege for me to be able to bring you those types of stories on this segment. My thanks to Claiborne for all of their support and for making these possible. Our sport is filled with unsung heroes like Peter, and if you do know someone that you feel should be recognized as an unsung hero in our sport, nominate them today by emailing their story directly to me, Mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will do my best to recognize them during these unsung hero segments in the weeks and the months ahead. I'm back right after this message from Claiborne.
Eclipse champion Blame has sired 5 Grade 1 winners, including Nadal, Marley's Freedom, Fault, Abscond, and French Classic winner Senga. Recent top runners include Aga Khan stud Saidabad, a star performer overseas, plus these recent standout performers. With success on the track and success in the ring, this proven son of Arch is truly a gold value stallion. Blame,
standing at Claiborne Farm.
When I return, we'll turn our attention to the breeding side of things. I'll welcome in Dermot Carty from Adena Springs to preview their stallion roster for the upcoming season. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The thrill of thoroughbred racing is back at Laurel Park. The brand new dirt surface and world-class turf course are ready for the races. Spend an afternoon dining with someone special at your choice of restaurants. Grab a bite with friends at the food court or relax and enjoy racing action from around the world in the sports bar. Laurel Park has it all. The beer is cold, the action is hot, and the horses are fast. Nothing beats a day at the track. Live racing Thursday through Sunday, post time, 12:40 p.m.
Four-time Grade 1 and Classic winner Tis the Law will be represented by his first foals in 2022. A winner on debut at the Spa, Tis the Law dominated the Champagne Stakes, previously won by exceptional Ashford sires Scat Daddy and Uncle Mo, before wins in the Holy Bull, Florida Derby, Belmont Stakes, and Travers. Tis the Law covered an outstanding first book, with his first in-foal mare selling at Keeneland November for up to $300,000. Standing for $35,000, Tis the Law represents incredible value. Call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And Frosted is still under a hand ride in the center of the track as he edges up to the leaders. And now, with a furlong to go, he is head and head for the lead. It is Frosted on the outside. A very confident ride here. Breaking Lucky and Move to Heizer down toward the rail. Shaman Ghost is there too. Frosted's going to have to work for it. It's going to be a photo finish. And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the Woodward.
Midnight Storm leading halfway down the stretch in the big cap. The whip is produced. Shaman Ghost is drifting out a little bit while giving chase. It's Midnight Storm. Shaman Ghost out towards the middle of the track. It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
A couple of very dominating wins by Shaman Ghost, both of those coming in prestigious Grade 1 races, the Woodward and the Big Cap, the Santa Anita Handicap. He was one heck of a racehorse and is turning into a pretty darn good stallion as well. 15 individual winners from 32 starters, including Slack Tide, who became Shaman Ghost's first black type winner when taking the 2021 running of the Angie C Stakes at Emerald Downs this past year. And I'm going to be joined by Dermot Carty from Adena Springs coming up here momentarily. Looking forward to that visit. He will walk through each of the stallions and tell you why they have had so much success, both north of the border and here in Kentucky. And if you're wondering about that stallion roster, Shaman Ghost is one of the stallions that is standing at Adena Springs North. And then there's American Guru and Point of Entry, Signature Red, and Silent Name, who is the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, has just been absolutely brilliant in his career thus far as well. So we'll talk to Dermot coming up there. And then in terms of the stallions that are standing here in Kentucky, Ghost Zapper, who has been a staple of consistency, and Mucho Macho Man, both standing here in Kentucky. So we'll talk to Dermot. Looking forward to that visit coming up momentarily. Don't forget to weigh in on our question of the day, if you haven't already done so, with the first Kentucky Derby future wagers pool taking place this weekend at Churchill Downs. I thought it was appropriate to ask you to tell us about the best Kentucky Derby future wager bet you have ever made. Whatever that might be, if it's a horse that you caught early, maybe it was in pool number one. Maybe it was, and it doesn't have to be at Churchill Downs in their future wager. Maybe it was out at Caesar's Palace, for example, and you were in Vegas and you took a shot with a horse and the horse turned out to win the Kentucky Derby and you made a whole boatload of money. Let me know the best Kentucky Derby future wager bet that you have ever made. I told you about Bobby Newman, who you heard in the first hour of the program. He tells a story about Fusaichi Pegasus and getting big odds on Fusaichi Pegasus, 100 and maybe 125 to 1, if I recall correctly. It was something like that before he even started. That's what the future wagers can do. And then there's a whole other conversation about that too, and that's the strategy of playing a future wager bet. For me, you really have to look at, well, number one, it's more risky right? It's much more risky than betting a horse on game day, on Derby day. Yeah, the reward can be huge because you're going to get bigger odds in theory betting early. But if the horse doesn't make it to the Kentucky Derby, you don't win your bet. Something happens with the horse for whatever reason. The horse doesn't get enough points to get into the race. Then you don't get your money back. So it is more risky. So I think you have to take that into account when you're looking at the odds that you're taking in a future wager bet. So, for example, if a horse is likely to be under 10 to 1 on Derby Day, which is one of the favorites, right? 20 horse field, you can have a favorite that is 9 to 2 or 4 to 1. So if you have a horse that's going to be likely one of the contenders and he's expected, if you think the horse is going to be really good and you think he's going to blitz through some of the prep races coming up over the next couple of months, well, then he's probably going to be under 10 to 1 on Derby Day. So you can't take under 10 to 1 on your future wager bet. You have to get more than that. And I would say significantly more. I think it's got to be 20 or 30 to 1 before you can even think about it, because the risk of that future wager bet is so huge. But if you have a thought on that too, feel free to let me know how you like to approach betting a future wager bet on the Kentucky Derby. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do social media, you can just email the show. You can always email me directly, mike@horseracingradio.net. Tell me about your best Kentucky Derby future wager bet that you have ever made. And then if you have a thought on strategy and how you like to approach it, let me know that too. And what do you think of the sire wager that Churchill Downs has incorporated into that future wager? I mean, it's not new. It's been out there, but What do you think of that side of it? Do you like to play the sire angle? Do you think maybe you get a little more value there as opposed to betting on an individual interest? Let me know those thoughts too. If you're wondering about the sires and how that all plays out right now with the Derby future wager, here's what it looks like as it opened on Thursday. The sire field includes stallions like American Pharoah and Candy Ride and Curlin and Empire Maker and Giant's Causeway and Gun Runner, Into Mischief. So many of the top stallions in the game today. Nyquist, for example. Street Sense. A couple of Derby winners there. But it's Quality Road, who opened as the 8-1 betting favorite in that future wager. Quality Road, of course, the sire of Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner Corniche. Told you earlier in the program that Corniche, because even though he's the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner and the Winter Book favorite in Vegas to win the Kentucky Derby, he's trained by Bob Baffert, who is banned from the Kentucky Derby next year. So Corniche is not among the individual betting interests with the Churchill Downs pool. But he is included in the All Others 3-year-old category. Corniche is son of Quality Road, so you can see why Quality Road is the opening morning line favorite, if you will, for that sire future wager. Interesting. Let me know your thoughts. Go ahead and shoot me an email. Hit us up on social media. Let me know your thoughts about your strategy when playing a future wager bet and your thoughts on the best Kentucky Derby future wager bet that you have ever made. You could do a heck of a lot worse than betting on a horse that is by the Adina Stallions, because they have been red hot over the years, and Adina has proven year in and year out that they can breed good horses, and they have done it. And I now have the privilege of welcoming in my good friend Dermot Carty, who is joining me north of the border to talk about the Adina Stallions. And this interview, by the way, brought to you by our friends at Jellyfish Water. Dermot, good morning, my friend.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing very, very well. I was walking through as we were reaching out to you. I was walking through the stallion roster at Adina Springs, and I started mentioning names like Point of Entry and Shaman Ghost and Silent Name. And then I got to the stallions here in Kentucky with Ghost Zapper and Mucho Macho Man. Boy, what a treat it has to be able to manage this stallion roster, huh?
Well, I'm very proud of the fact that we actually have on both sides of the border, top class stallions. a decision was made last year that Frank, in his ultimate wisdom, of giving back. And part of the reason we brought some of these horses up here to Ontario, and it was a very, very strong reason, Frank started out up here, okay? And his first great racehorse that put him on the international map would have been Glorious Song. And she did her initial racing up here. She was bought out of Woodbine. And then, of course, you know, he moved, when he started moving part of the operation down into Kentucky, a continuance went on through to breed the best of the best and try and come up with the top-class horses. And over the years, I think we have. Our first young stallion that really made it big was El Prado. It's a horse that we brought out of Ireland. Was probably one of the most successful sons of Sadler's Wells, period. And we've toyed with a lot of ideas with other stallions as well. But in general, the homebred stuff has actually worked out quite well. And Ghost Harper is the result of breeding a homebred stallion. And Shaman Ghost is following in his footsteps. And we actually, the first year that he stud, he was sent to California. And the reasoning behind that was Frank's vision to help California race to get back on a foothold again. And he ended up out there. The quality of mares probably would not have been the highest. But having said all of that, he has actually done quite well. For the amount of horses that he has out there. But the interesting thing, we brought him back to Kentucky and the mares that he bred in Kentucky, the averages started going through the ceilings. And, you know, we do have a horse running this weekend by him called Chanteur, who runs in a listed race, which is a good listed race. Would be one of the top ones, a $250,000 stake. And we hope that continuance of him will he be able to walk in his father's footsteps. And I think that's not going to be an issue here now because he's proven himself with mares that are not of the highest caliber to be able to produce winners and runners and so on and so forth, which, as we all know, it's almost an impossibility in the days of the big books. People think that you can just breed and off you go to the races. It doesn't work like that anymore.
Yeah.
In fact, racing here in Ontario is very, very competitive. A lot of people from all over the world race here because, the track has Tapeta and two turf surfaces. And if it's stuck on that, you can also go off down to Fort Erie, which actually has a dirt and turf surface. So you have five different options that you can play with here, okay? Let's go through these other stallions here, and then we'll talk about them a little bit here.
Yeah.
Point of Entry went through a little bit of a cold spell. I mean, we didn't, if you've been around as long as I have, when your hair wasn't almost gray, you realize that the peaks and valleys come, but it's the horse that's able to pull themselves back out of the valley and put themselves back at the top of the mountain that really, really counts. And he has done that. If you look at, in particular, this year, he's had winners. Well, he's had winners all over the world. He's had winners in Japan, United States, Canada, Great Britain. He's actually had winners in Saudi Arabia. He's had a winner in Korea. He's had a winner in France. He's a winner in Mexico. He's a winner actually in Italy. Puerto Rico has had a couple of winners. Chile has had winners by him. Ireland's had a winner by him.
Wow.
And so on and so forth. So, I mean, he's definitely an international horse, a very interesting pedigree. I think it comes as the FIPS breeding program at the ultimate level. And quite well aware of the FIPS breeding program. Many, many years ago, I bought in, I would say, a third division horse called Philanthropist in here. by Chris S. Out of a Gone West Line mare, and then following, this is probably a reason too why we have him as well. The cross seemed to work quite well up here, and he's done a 360 this year in particular, his babies that are running, and so we're really delighted with him. The other stallion we have of note is Silent Name.
Yeah.
He's responsible for 14 stake horses this year. Now, it's been a long time, and I've been around a while, that any stallion in Canada breeding locally has been able to do what he has done this particular year. He's had a grade one winner, group two winners. The other night, the juvenile horses were running by him. There was two new stake horses by him. I know what value for money. I mean, he stands at 7,500 Canadian. This year, we're going to be a little tighter on the type of mares that go into him due to the fact of his age. He's 19 turning 20, so we want to be very respectful towards him. So we're looking forward to a great year. But it's a fantastic pedigree. When you would look at that pedigree, when we initially bought the horse, and, you know, I mean, to pat myself on the back a little bit, but some of the other horses that we bought, all the pedigrees have become enhanced over a period of time, which shows you that the female families have actually come through. Mm-hmm. And, there's big hopes still here. And, we've got programs that are going into place. We also have two other horses that were standing here. We have... And actually one of my favorites, physically. I mean, absolutely, class act when you really look at the individual. You can see it on our website, www.dinastallions.com. It's a horse called American Guru by Unbridled Sound of Code of Camarouche.
Yeah, he's striking.
He is gorgeous. Can walk. I mean, he set a new course record at Belmont Park. Unfortunately, he was taken down last year, but he did set a record that was held for a long time for a mile. And it's a proven winning family. I mean, it's you look at his family itself. His dam is the 3/4 horse to Indy 500, who is now the dam of Magna Coors. She's also half to the dam of Good Forest, which is now a stakes placed and grade three horse in dirt and certificate in Europe. And of course, Delta Princess doesn't need any introduction. A family that we really, really loved. Unfortunately, we ended up losing probably one of the up-and-coming young stars in that family with Delta Prince when he got sick of us, and unfortunately, we lost him. The other horse that we have up here as well is a horse owned by one of our dearest friends, Howie Walton. That's a horse called Signature Red. He's on track too. From limited opportunities, he gets a top-class horse, and he's also very good physical. So to be actually sitting here with five horses that, offer different bloodlines out, but, the fact of the matter is they're making it. And they're not just making it in restricted races, they're making it in open races. I mean, Point of Entry had a grade one winner this year. Solid Names had a grade one winner. Shaman Ghost is he's trucking along very, very well. He's just a matter of time before he actually hits off and gets the top class horse. And of course, it's all to do with the mares, and it's just a stunning horse. Okay, in Kentucky, we've made a deal with John Secura at Hillendale. To stand our other two horses. Ghost Zapper, I don't think, needs any introduction. I mean, he's Yeah, like it's like asking what color is blue, you know? you know, you'd have to be a half-wit not to figure that one out. And, of course, Mucho Macho Man is he's a pedigree that's getting better and better also.
Yeah.
He's having a little bit of a cool year, but that turns around very, very quickly. All it takes is one or two good horses and you're off to the races again. So when you look at what we have between the two farms, the one in Kentucky, which we always have supported down there, and the farm in Canada, I think we give opportunities for people to either go south or come north, but we're given good quality and great value. And we haven't overpriced any of our stallions. I mean, they're all in a reasonable price range where the breeder, which is the most important part of this business, can actually make some money. The old trick of the trade that people have been doing over the years, as soon as the stallion starts to make it, is pump the stud fee out of the ceiling. And therefore, you know, a lot of the people that actually stuck by you can no longer afford to get in. And it's Frank's philosophy. Those are the type of people that we need in racing. We need this marketplace to create the supply of horses. One of the things, too, by the Ontario program here, it actually ends up being a feeder for Gulfstream Park and Laurel as well. So a lot of the horses in the wintertime, due to the weather up here, they move down south or out east, and, you know, the whole operation gets reap the rewards. Unfortunately, you have to have your own stallion station to do this properly.
Yeah,
we found that through over the years that we've tried different spots, but I mean, at the end of the day, when you watch what's going on in your own backyard, you know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, it's been an amazing ride for Frank Stronach and for you, Dermot, and the team. And, you know, Frank is always, he's a horseman. He's always put horsemen first, and he's always tried to give back to the sport whenever he can. And I do have a commercial break to get to before I wrap up this hour of the program. But I'll just encourage people, Dermot, to head over to the website, adinastallions.com, and they can get a good look at all the stallions, and they can learn more about each of them and read about some of the things that you've been talking about here. And listen, greatly appreciate the visit this morning and appreciate the support of what we do here on the network. And adinastallions.com is the place to go.
Well, thank you very much. And we look forward to having some people come and visit us up here.
Yeah, thank you, my friend.
Bring the mares up here. Thank you very much. Okay.
Dermot Carty here on the Horse Racing Radio Network really does a fantastic job. And those stallions and that philosophy at Adina has held true for many, many years. I'm back to wrap up the second hour. Get you ready for a busy third hour. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Thoroughbred Charities of America raises and distributes funding to approved nonprofits that help thoroughbreds and the people who care for them. TCA's annual grants support aftercare and incentive programs, health and human service initiatives for backstretch and farm workers, and equine-assisted therapy programs that utilize thoroughbreds. TCA is one, helping many. Please support TCA today at tca.org.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
People do some pretty cool things in their 40s and 50s. Why should saving for retirement be any different? I mean, they go back to college, learn new instruments, start skateboarding.
Whoa.
Okay, maybe that one's not for everybody, but saving for retirement is. With aceyourretirement.org, you can get on track with your retirement savings no matter your age. Just have a 3-minute chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach from AARP. You'll get personalized recommendations based on your input that are easy to understand and work with your lifestyle. It's quick, easy, and free. Plus, it's sponsored by AARP, so you know they got your back.
Woo-hoo. Gnarly move, Dad.
Thanks, sweetie.
So wherever you are in your retirement savings journey, head to aceyourretirement.org and start chatting with Avo today. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Briznet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Briznet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net. You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
2 hours down, one to go. Hour three of the Equine Forum is coming up right now.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Final 16th, here's Signalman and Pluskapar Faye to the wire together. Signalman inside, got it!
Stay at the spa, still five from the front, and Better Lucky has stormed to the lead. Better Lucky now in front of Summer Soiree in second. Between horses, Tis Flirtatious. Better Lucky, Tis Flirtatious second. Better Lucky wins the Matriarch.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And here comes Camelot, getting with a late run down at the rail. Blackjack Cat battles on as well. Annals a time. Annals a time out of nowhere. Annals a time just blew past him. And Annals a time, a striking one. Clairier in front with a 16th to go. Travel Column's getting on track late in the game. Here comes Travel Column. Travel Column runs down Clairier to win the Goldenrod.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour three of the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment, rolls on. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch. Plenty more to come, too. And by the way, if you did miss any portion of the first couple of hours of the program, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can check out the podcast of all of the segments that we brought your way so far. So many have really been worth going back and listening to a second time. I got so involved in the conversation with Dermot Carty from Edina Springs, which was presented by our friends at Jellyfish Water in that last segment. I forgot to tell you a little bit more about Jellyfish Water. And I can tell you this, whether you are a jockey, an owner, a trainer, or a horse player, it doesn't matter. There is always an opportunity to refresh and reset with every loss, and certainly a reason to rejoice with every win. Jellyfish Water is a bottle of inspiration, a set of principles, and a state of mind. Find your case of inspiration at jellyfishwater.com. Got my case of inspiration a couple of weeks ago, and it is fantastic. You won't be disappointed, I can promise you that. Well, the third hour of the show features In the Room with Sean Clancy. That's how we kick it off every single week for you. Sean's one-on-one conversation with a jockey. This time, a special replay of his conversation with Hall of Famer Lafitte Pinkei Jr., one of the best to ever do it. This was a really, really tremendous conversation. So stay tuned for that coming up momentarily. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History coming up at 10:25 Eastern. And I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin coming up right around 10:30-ish, right in that ballpark here this morning. So a lot of things to get to. Hour three begins with In the Room with Sean Clancy.
Think I get the whip of immortality as Irish Tip is finding plenty on the lead. Responding to the Pink Guy's power, it's Irish Tip surging clear with the history of Hollywood Park as the Pink Guy Jr. becomes the world's all-time winningest jockey.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Lafitte Pinkei Jr.
9,530 wins, $237 million in earnings, 5 Eclipse Awards, the Hall of Fame, 7 Breeders' Cup wins, Biakoa, Skywalker, Grainton, Affirmed, Perot, Creme Fraiche, Caveat, Gate Dancer, Steinland, John Henry, Swale, Spend a Buck. Awesome career. It is my pleasure and honor to be in the room with jockey Lafitte Pincai. Welcome to the show, Lafitte.
Hi. Hi, Sean. Thank you very much for having me this morning.
It's our pleasure. It's the first Saturday in May. We'll jump right in there. You won the Kentucky Derby in 1984 with Swale. Tell us about that moment for you. I know you've been trying for a while. What was that like for in your career?
Yes, that's right. The winner on Swale was a dream come true. I've been trying for so many years to try to win, that race, and it always something happened, always something that it just didn't come my way. Sometimes I got in trouble. Sometimes my horse looks like the winner, and he fade to the stretch. And other times, great horses like Secretaria and Spectacular beat me. So I just for a while didn't think I was going to be able to win it, and then all of a sudden getting the mount on Swale and win it. You know, it was really, really a fabulous day.
Take us through the trip. I mean, was it a dream trip? Did you feel like you were going to win the whole way? One of those races that's just as smooth as silk, or what was that like?
Yes. Well, I knew that Swale has some speed, you know, and I used it to get a good position. I wanted to make sure that I didn't lose that much ground in the first turn. And which I did. I was laying in third lane. I was laying perfect most of the way. And he just from then on, I just follow Altia. I moved a little bit too soon, but it was because Altia just fade. You know, the 3 pole, between the 3 pole and the half a mile pole, she just got tired. And I find myself on the lead. And I wanted to wait a little more, but anyway, I was on the lead, and when the stretch come, when he switched lead, I asked him, and I started hollering at him, and I hit him a couple of times left-handed, and then I hand-rode him, and as the wire came close, you know, I just felt really, really good, and crossing the wire, it was really, really a fantastic moment for me in my career.
No doubt. And the funny part about being a jockey, I mean, that was actually about halfway through your career. But being a jockey, you never know how long your career will last. So you must be getting that kind of sense of urgency, like you really want to win one like
yeah,
that. I mean, that is a career maker.
Yeah. For some reason, I don't know. I kept thinking that was going to be my last chance to win the Derby. For some reason, I had that idea, and of course, I felt a little pressure before the race because I really, really wanted to win that race. And I was very fortunate to win it because the day that the last race that he ran prior to the Derby, he ran in the Lexington Handicap, and he got beat. He got beat way off. And my agent told me that I think we should move to another horse that I was riding in California. And he thought he had a better chance to win the Derby. And I for some reason, thank God he asked me, because most of the time he didn't ask me. You know, he just did on his own, you know. So I said to him, no, we're going to stay on Swale, because if he fires, like he fired in the Florida Derby, he's going to be very tough to beat. And thank God that I made that decision.
Wow. Yeah, that's just conviction, right? I mean, you got faith in your horse, and that's so important when you're a jockey, right?
That's right. Well, I not only had faith in him, I had faith on the trainer, you know.
Sure.
You know, I had a lot of faith in him, you know, and he put me in a lot of horses, a lot of winners. So, I think he had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, what was it like riding for Woody Stevens? I mean, you got on those good horses, Caveat and Conquistador Cielo and Swale, and what was he like to ride for? He give you a lot of instructions, or he give you a lot of confidence? What was that like?
No, he just gave you confidence, but his instructions were good. Were good, and in fact, when I won on Caveat, I remember that he before that race, his prep race, he showed a lot of speed for some reason, and he won. And the trainer, when I went to the paddock, I thought he probably won me the lane. Four, fifth, or six, you know. But he came to the paddock and he said to me, "Listen, you just take this horse way back." And I was very surprised, you know, because that's having confidence in the horse, you know, because most of the trainers want to see their horses close to the pace on in a position that they can see him close, you know, not that far back. But he told me, just take him far back. He told me, you know, so I did. And sure enough, he came through. He came flying at the end, you know.
That was to win the Belmont, right? One of three in a row, I guess.
Yes, that's right.
Wow. And other guys you rode for, like a guy like Charlie Whittingham, what was he like to ride for? Did he do the same thing, give you a lot of confidence or instructions, or what was he like?
No, he was very, very good, too. The only thing I remember he used to say to me, listen, son, just get in some room to go. It's like telling you, just don't get in trouble. Just get him in the outside, and you have plenty of horse. You know, he was such a great trainer. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. And you chased Bill Shoemaker. I mean, his career wins. That was a mark for you for a long time. What was that like when you reached Bill Shoemaker? Was there a moment where you kind of took a deep breath, or what was that like? I know it had to be a goal of yours to go after him.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it was also a dream come true, you know, beating the record of the best rider, my idol. And once that I got closer, you know, even though I wasn't getting that many mounts, but I just kept the hope and I kept trying and I switched my diet and things started going better. And little by little, when it was close, I remember when I was about maybe 800 winners behind, I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it, you know. And sure enough, you know, little by little, I got close, and that day came up, and, you know, it was fantastic. It really was.
And I get, as a jockey, I mean, it is the individual winners, but, I mean, it's funny to look at some and say, okay, I'm 800 behind, but you can't jump ahead. You got to, I mean, it is one by one every day, and it's really plying your trade and working at it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Especially when you're getting older, you know? And,
sure.
Yeah, you're getting older, and the trainers, they are a little bit hesitant to use you. And some guys don't care, you know? Some guys respect still your ability, but some guys, they very, they don't want to take anything for. They don't want to take any chance with a rider that they might think is older, you know. And they start using the younger rider, the guys that they look probably better on the horses, and that's what it is. It's a tough business, you know. And everybody wants the edge. Everybody
sure.
wants the edge, you know. So. And you can blame him, you know. It's a lot of pressure. The trainers wants to win, the jockeys want to win, the owner wants to win, and they always look for the winner. So it's tough. It's a tough, very tough business. And now it's even tougher now because there are not that many horses, you know.
Right, sure.
There are not that many horses, especially for a young rider that he wants to source, yeah, and become a. You know, he doesn't have that many horses to ride every day because the top riders, the ones that are winning all the races, they are right there and working hard and picking out the best mount, and it's tough, you know?
Yeah, I never thought about it. I mean, as a jockey, you think you get, as you get older, you think you'd have more, people would have more confidence, but actually as you get older, you still have to, you almost have to prove that you still have it, right, to trainers.
Yeah, exactly. You have to prove. Oh, I had to do that a few times in my career when I was down and out. I wasn't riding that many good horses, but I always started working harder, trying to do different things and trying to improve myself. And it He worked every time. Every time that I got my mind into it, I start doing better. You know, even though before I broke the Shoemaker's record, I wasn't doing that good that I was going to move to North California. I was going to find it there, yes. And then I changed my mind the last minute, and I said, well, if I want to stay over here and keep trying, I got to change something, you know. And then I changed my diet and start eating very healthy, very nutritious food. And my strength went up, my energy, and I started riding better, and I started winning races again. And that's how I got to break the record. And after I retired, I was feeling so good that I kept doing the same thing. You know, I still on my diet, and I eat very healthy, and you know, I'm 74 years old, and I still feel very young. I could do anything right now, you know.
Wow, I love it. You don't split that peanut four ways on a flight. I mean, that's a great story, right? I mean, is that really the truth? I mean, that really happened?
No. To tell you the truth, I don't remember that.
No, it's a great racetrack story about taking a peanut and splitting it in four pieces and eating it across a flight, but. I mean, that's great to know that you're 74. I mean, you retired with a broken neck, but that doesn't bother you. I mean, you're in good health today.
Yes, not at all. You know, for a while, it really got tense. Every time I did something strenuous, it got tense, and I had to I put this massage my neck and try to alleviate it, you know. But as time went by, you know, I don't have to do anything anymore, and it's fine. It really is fine, yes.
Wow, that's great. Who was the best horse you rode? I mean, I know it's a tough question, like picking a child, but it was the, you know, Brilliance of Affirmed or the Quirkiness of Gate Dancer or Bayakoa? I mean, you're undefeated on Affirmed. Who was the best?
Well, definitely, Affirm was the best horse I ever rode because he was consistent. He carried a lot of weight. He broke a few records, you know. He's a smart horse. I could do anything I wanted with him. He has speed. He could come from behind. Believe me, he could do so many things, this horse, you know. Yes, very smart horse.
Yes. And you can feel that. I mean, you get on a horse like Affirmed, you know, even if you didn't know who it was, you'd feel how good that horse is.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And from the beginning, you know, I thought it was something very special when he came to Hollywood Park that first year. He only broke his maiden. He won maybe a couple of races, a maiden and an allowance race, I think. And then he came to ride the juvenile stake at Hollywood Park. And then Lázaro Barrera told me one morning, I want you to walk this horse for me. And my agent had told me that I was going to ride a good 2-year-old for Lázaro Barrera. So I went to work in that morning. And I worked him, and believe me, he was looking around, you know. I went 5/8 miles. He was looking around, you know, and I kept, like, you know, I don't want him to walk too slow either, you know, but I don't want him to go too fast. But it didn't seem like it went fast at all. So after the workout, Lázaro, he asked me, he says, how fast did he go? I said, well, Lázaro, he was looking around a lot, you know. It didn't seem like he wanted to put up too much, you know, and I think he went in like a 101. He said, well, he went in 58 and change. Oh, gosh, I couldn't believe it.
Wow, isn't that something?
And then he won by 7 lengths in the juvenile. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's the definition of a good horse, right? They're going fast but don't feel like they're going fast.
Exactly, yes.
I even rode a few jumpers that felt that way.
Yeah.
But only a few. Well, when you look back at your success, how much of it is luck and how much of it is hard work and talent?
Well, I tell you, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of ability too. But of course, you can win races with luck. Sometimes you are at the right place at the right time. You know, sometimes it's like you've been in the race and all of a sudden you have no place to go. And you're coming down the stretch, there's no place to go, and you don't think you're going to get through. And you get a little like, gosh, I'm going to get beat because I have no place to go.
Right.
And all of a sudden something open up, a little hole open up, and you get lucky. And you go through and you win the race. You know, and
yeah, sure.
And just lucky that space open up, because if it doesn't open up, you are not going to win.
Right, sure.
So, but sometimes you just get stuck behind, and there's nothing you can do, and you have to wait until the next time and see if they are not upset with you, and let you ride the horse again, and because in this business, you know, if the trainer or owner think you're costing the race, he's not going to use you next time, you know. So,
sure.
They take you off and put somebody else, and, you know, and it's not even your fault, and you lose the mount.
Right. Yeah, it happens every day, right?
Yes, a lot. Yes.
Well, one final question. There's a bunch of guys riding the Derby. What would you get one piece of advice for them? What would you tell them?
Well, just be prepared and just try not to get in trouble, which sometimes it can be, it's hard, it's not easy, you know, in so many horses. I would say 25 years ago, the fields were very small, 12 horses probably, maybe 13. But now you see 20 horses, you know, it's tough, especially if you come from behind. And just try to ride a good race. That's all, you know. And be careful, because a lot of horses, it could be a lot of traffic, you know. And just try to ride a good race, you know, and be prepared.
That's Lafitte Pinkeye Jr., a living legend. Nobody did it better. Thanks, Lafitte. It's an honor for you to be on the show, and all the best.
All right, thank you, Sean. Thank you for having me.
Well, one of the greatest to ever get a leg up, Lafitte Pinkeye Jr. with Sean Clancy in the room. If you missed any of our In the Room segments over the past several months, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of each one of them. They have been fantastic, and as you just heard, Lafitte was incredible. When I come back, another segment which has become extremely popular on the show each week, that is Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, and then we'll get ready for I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. That's next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Riptide Rock flying down the outside. I think safe conduct narrowly from Riptide Rock, and a photo in the Queen's Plate. And Raging Bull, that Dice K. Fukumoto stole this year's Rico Woodbine Mile with Town Cruise. Walton Street demolishes them, a big winner of the Patterson Canadian International.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern, and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
Four-time Grade 1 and Classic winner Tis the Law will be represented by his first foals in 2022. A winner on debut at the Spa, Tis the Law dominated the Champagne Stakes, previously won by exceptional Ashford sires Scat Daddy and Uncle Mo, before wins in the Holy Bull, Florida Derby, Belmont Stakes, and Travers. Tis the Law covered an outstanding first book, with his first in-foal mare selling at Keeneland November for up to $300,000. Standing for $35,000, Tis the Law represents incredible value. Call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
The Adina Springs Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaform Azare, point of entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of Grade 1 performers in his crop. Multiple Grade 1 winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the Woodward
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poets won it.
And the newest addition to the Edina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector info sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. He won the Kentucky Jockey Club Stakes at Churchill Downs in the fall of 1930 on his way to becoming a pop culture icon of the Depression era. A line of tobacco products would be named for him, and his likeness would even be used as a marketing tool for double-edged razor blades. His name was 20 Grand. Bred and owned by Helen Hay Whitney's Green Tree Stable, 20 Grand was foaled at the Green Tree Stud in Lexington, Kentucky in 1928. A son of Green Tree's imported stallion St. Germans, 20 Grand was a blood bay, almost red or chestnut in appearance. He was described as well-developed, with plenty of bone and substance. Given that the United States had been thrown into an economic depression at the time he was beginning his racing career, 20 Grand had a name which clashed with the harsh reality that many Americans were facing. He was owned by one of the wealthiest, most aristocratic families in North America. But the name 20 Grand actually seemed to capture the public's fancy, and people from coast to coast came to celebrate his achievements. 20 Grand first gained attention on October 4, 1930, when he won the Junior Champion Stakes at Aqueduct. Dispatched at odds of 7-1, he upset the 1-5 favorite Equipoise with a mile in 1 minute 38 seconds flat. Observers noted that Gallant Fox had won the same race in the exact same time 1 year earlier, before sweeping the Kentucky Derby, Preakness, and Belmont the following spring. Some 12 days later, on October 16th, 20 Grand headed to Churchill Downs for the Kentucky Jockey Club Stakes, which, one might say, was the Breeders' Cup juvenile of its time. The race paid $25,000 to the winner and usually determined the winter book favorite for the Kentucky Derby. 20 Grand would once again be the second choice behind Equipoise, and once again, 20 Grand would prevail. Beating the favorite by a neck, 20 Grand got the mile in 1 minute 36 seconds flat, not only breaking the track record, but also knocking a full second off the world record for a 2-year-old at the distance. Equipoise, owned by Helen Hay Whitney's nephew, Cornelius Vanderbilt Whitney, was still considered champion 2-year-old for 1930, mainly on the strength of his $150,000 in earnings. By comparison, 20 Grand had won only $35,000. But 20 Grand was a late-blooming sensation, with the Kentucky Jockey Club marking his fourth win in just six starts. As 1930 drew to a close, 20 Grand's trainer, Thomas W. Murphy, began clashing with Green Tree racing advisor Louis Beard over management of the colt. The dispute would result in Murphy being fired at the end of the year. And so, James Rowe Jr., better known as Jimmy, would become 20 Grand's new conditioner. And the Ivy League graduate, who was 42 years of age at the time, would prove equal to the task. On May 2, 1931, 20 Grand made his 3-year-old debut in the Wood Memorial. In a race which was shrouded in fog, 20 Grand rallied from fourth in the final furlong to win as the 3-5 favorite by a half length. Following a loss in the Preakness, 20 Grand headed to Churchill Downs for the 57th running of the Kentucky Derby, and he capitalized when arch-rival Equipoise was scratched with an injury on the morning of the race. With jockey Charlie Kurtzinger aboard, 20 Grand rolled to victory in the run for the Roses and got the mile and a quarter in 2 minutes 1 and 4/5 seconds, a track and stakes record. Charles Curtis, the Vice President of the United States, was on hand that day to present the trophy. In June, there would be a 10-length victory in the Belmont Stakes. In July, he would win the Dwyer. August would see him win the prestigious Travers Stakes at Saratoga. And in September, he would gallop to victory in the Jockey Club Gold Cup at Belmont Park. All told, 20 Grand would win 8 of his 10 starts as a 3-year-old, with earnings that year of nearly $220,000.
He would eventually be retired to stallion duty at Greentree, would briefly stand at stud in Ireland, and would ultimately return to the United States to Greentree to live out his final days. 20 Grand died on March 2, 1948 at the age of 20. He was buried at Greentree, with his gravesite now part of modern-day Gainsway Farm. Retroactively named three-year-old champion and Horse of the Year for 1931, he was inducted into Racing's Hall of Fame in 1957. Later today, the Kentucky Jockey Club Stakes will highlight the racing program at Churchill Downs. The folks at Churchill like to build the race as a chance to see future racing stars and Kentucky Derby hopefuls. And they have the history to back up that claim, even dating back 9 decades ago when 20 Grand used the race as a springboard to becoming the nation's top racehorse of 1931. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Well, nobody tells a story like Kurt Becker. Fantastic stuff there. Again, if you missed any of those Stroll Through Racing History segments over the past several weeks, all you have to do is head back to the website, and there's a page designated just for those stories, and you can binge listen on those each and every week. When I come back, trainer Dale Romans, turf writer Tim Wilkin debate many of the hottest topics in the sport today. It's I Ask, They Answer. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
A 5-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Champions are returning to Gulfstream for the championship meet starting December 3rd until April 3rd. Witness the best thoroughbred racing Wednesday through Sunday with weekly stakes races. Returning for its 6th year this January is the 2022 Pegasus World Cup with world-class racing, delectable cuisine, stunning celebrities, and iconic fashion. New for 2022 is the 3rd graded stakes race, the Pegasus Turf for fillies and mares with a $500,000 purse. Tickets go on sale November 8th. Visit PegasusWorldCup.com to learn more and get tickets.
An undefeated graded stakes winner on the track, Algorithms, has sired over 70% winners from starters. His top runners include Pennsylvania Derby winner Math Wizard, graded stakes winner Recruiting Ready, juvenile stakes winner and multiple graded stakes placed South Bend. And these recent stakes winners and stakes performers.
To get there, but Kanani will win it.
Algorithms, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Weanling shopping? Buy Maryland breads and take advantage of one of the most innovative programs in the country. Breeders earn a 30% share of purses on all overnight races for Maryland bred horses finishing in the top three, and 15% in all stakes when your Maryland bred finishes in the top three, capped at $100,000. Owners earn a 15% share on all overnight races for Maryland bred horses finishing first, second, or third, and developers get a 15% share on all overnight races for Maryland breds in the top three spots. Visit MarylandThoroughbred.com for details.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Pinehurst is in between horses. Papa Cap is down at the rail. Giant Game is sent up four wide, midway on the far turn. After that, it's Double Thunder and Barossa. Corniche coming to the top of the stretch with the lead in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And Giant Game is closing on the outside. Now moving up right alongside of Corniche as they come to the final furlong. Corniche with something left. Giant Game off the rail. Papa Cap trying to split those two, but it's Corniche. He's just too good. Corniche wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And then it was Papa Cap in second. Giant Game was third. Command Performance fourth.
Larry Colmus with the call of this year's Breeders' Cup Juvenile is heard on NBC Sports and right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Welcome to this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. This is the segment where we debate and share opinions on some of racing's hottest topics and even a few that have absolutely nothing to do with racing. And as always, I welcome two guys who are never shy with an opinion. That is trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. Guys, happy to have you on board today. I guess we'll start with the first Kentucky Derby future wager pool, which wraps up this weekend. No horse trained by Bob Baffert being offered among the individual betting interests. That, of course, includes Corniche, who is the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner and the Winter Book favorite, but they are included in the all other three-year-olds category of that wager. So I will ask you, is it fair to put Corniche and the other Baffert runners into the all others category, or should Churchill have left them out of the wagering altogether until a final decision regarding Baffert is made? Timmy, you want to kick it off for us this week?
Sure, Mike. I don't know what to make of all this. I mean, if you're going to kick them out, kick them out. If you're not going to kick them out, don't kick them out. It just makes no sense to me why it seems like they're just stringing him along after saying he wasn't going to be able to be involved with the Derby for 2 years. But now you're putting his horses into the also eligible list. It makes no sense to me. Unless they're hedging their bets in case, the tests come back and it doesn't go as a positive. You know, it just makes no sense to me what Churchill's doing with this.
Dale?
Absolutely ridiculous. It's not very well thought out. They kicked him out too quick, too early. Should let due process take its course. And if you're going to put up a poll, put the horse in there, and everybody in the public knows there's a chance he won't get in without 8 points. Let him bet accordingly. Maybe it'd be a higher price. But, you know, historically, the all others goes off to favorite in the first couple of pools anyway. So it's just going to make it overwhelming favorite.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. With those horses included, it's going to be an overwhelming favorite. But I kind of agree, guys. I don't see how, if you're going to include them in the all others category, just include them in the body of the field, too. And as Dale said, let people bet accordingly or leave them out altogether.
It's kind of ridiculous. When you start using the Kentucky Derby as a weapon, there's all kinds of problems going to follow. I mean, it's the sacred jewel that we have in our game, and they have a major responsibility to take care of it. And I think they're doing a poor job. Whenever you start using it as a weapon, you can have a weapon used back against you.
And I've said this before, and, you know, Bob has been the face of horse racing for a long time, and he's not getting any kind of a fair trial right now. I mean, how long ago was it when Churchill Downs kicked him out? It was right after the Derby, right? After this thing all started. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And the people that are just piling on now on social media, and I've said this before, they're trying him on social media, and that's not fair either.
Yeah, I'm sick of all the trolls and haters and everything. Let due process run its course. Everybody was on Bob Baffert's bandwagon for the last 30 years. And now they see blood in the water, they go after him. It's really ridiculous. And I mean, if he's guilty, he's guilty. I'm not defending him or his bad test or anything, but I am defending due process for him or anybody else.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys this question. If Corniche was in the body of the field, which, you know, if you're going to have him in here, let's put him in the body of the field and let people bet on him as an individual interest. Would you bet on him now, knowing what's surrounding that horse?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, he's going to run in the Derby. If he gets points, and I mean, if he gets is healthy at that time, he'll be in the Kentucky Derby. I'm going out on a limb and stating that for a fact. I think he will be in one way or another. You might take a lot of legal wrangling, but he'll be in there.
We know that, Dale, we know you're the mayor of Churchill Downs. You know something we don't know?
No, nothing at all. I just know that. Do you want to run the Kentucky Derby without the best horse in the country in the race? I don't know.
Maybe. Well, I agree with that.
Yeah. Of course, he still has to get points.
I mean,
yeah, he still has to get points.
One of mine gets in there, and he's not in there. But, you know, for the history and for the race, you got to have the best 22-year-olds in the country running.
Yep. He still has to get points. He still has to stay healthy between now and then and stay on track. That certainly will play into this, too. We'll see how it all plays out.
Now,
all right.
He may not be trained by Bob Baffert for his next start. Who knows?
That's true, too. Yeah, that's true, too. The owners are going to have some decisions to make as to what they do with that horse if they are going to point for the Kentucky Derby. All right, second topic. It involves the Derby, but a little different angle here, guys. Ed DeRosa, who has spent several years as co-host of our Brisnet call-in show here on the network, he tweeted recently that he loves the Kentucky Derby point system, and he stated that it's much better to have Churchill Downs in control of the prep races as opposed to leaving them in the hands of the Graded Stakes Committee. So with 161 days until the Run for the Roses next year, is the point system fine just the way it is, or if not, what changes would make it better? Dale?
I like the old system of money gets you in for several reasons. I think if you go back and look, there are very few horses that wouldn't have gotten in on the old system. It basically gets you the same group of 20 horses, but it gives you the opportunity to prep one on grass, which I did twice with two horses running third in the Derby. And it also puts the fillies into play where, you know, even if they don't run, I always thought it was interesting every year to have discussion on whether or not Rachel Alexander should be running in the Kentucky Derby or the Oaks. They've taken all that out of it. And now, just like the last topic we had, we gave them more power to use the Derby as a weapon. On the old system, they couldn't control the points. I don't believe it's right for Churchill to control everything. I think you should, and it's not up to the Graded Stakes Committee. What's the difference? They're all Graded Stakes. It was Graded Stakes earnings anyway. They don't have points on any non-Graded Stakes. So I think the old system was fine. I think there's flaws in the point system.
Timmy?
Well, yeah. When this thing came out, the point system started, 2012? And then it took out some of the, you know, no more sprint races. You know, it puts a big emphasis on later races of the year to get the points. And I think it you know, I'm not a trainer, but I'm sure it changes the way that a horseman gets his horse ready for the first Saturday in May. And this isn't going to change, you know, it's not going to change which horse is the top point getter, graded stakes earner. You know, it's not, those horses are going to be in there anyway. But this is just, to me, it seems like you get these horses, it just takes a little bit of the human element out of it, of how the horsemen train these horses. And, you know, it's... Under this system, would mine that bird have gotten in 2009? I'm not sure. You know, you look at some of these horses that they're still upset horses that win the Derby. The last three horses that won the Kentucky Derby were not the favorite, including Country House, who won via DQ at 65-1. I mean, I think that the Graded Stakes was fine the way it was, but I can see why they do it the way they do it with the points. I mean, it's only going to really affect the last couple horses that get in anyway with the point system.
Right, right.
They do the points just to have control. They used it as a weapon once before against Hawthorne when they were in a beef in Chicago between Arlington and Hawthorne over something. They took away the points for the Illinois Derby. I mean, it's too much power in their hands. They want to control everything and use the Derby as leverage over everybody else in all other racetracks.
Dale, has the point system changed the way that you prepare and approach prep races?
It took away some of my options. Like I said before, Paddy Prado and Dullahan, both third in the Derby, had prepped twice on turf during the winter and went over and then ran into bluegrass and got some more dirt money and ended up getting in. You can't do that in today's world.
Yeah. All right.
It does put a lot more emphasis on the later races, too. And really, the last round's the only mile eighth races that you have to accumulate those kinds of points if you've got a horse that wants to go that far.
Yeah, and those later races are winning your ends.
Yeah. If you have a horse that's on the bubble, so to speak, and he's a major contender, and if he doesn't run big in his last prep race, he's out of luck.
Yep, he'd be out of luck, and it could be a contender. But I don't think if you go back and look at who's gotten in, who hadn't gotten in, I don't think it's changed a whole lot. But it does put a lot more power into one place's hands.
Yep. All right, moving on. Topic number three, and this involves a couple of the top jockeys in the game today. Thoroughbred Racing Commentary sent out their weekly update on global rankings for horses, trainers, owners, sires, and jockeys. There are two American-based riders in the top five of the jockey standings globally. Joel Rosario, who ranked number three in the world, and Flavien Prat ranked number four. Did that poll get this right? Are Joel and Flavien the top two riders in America today?
You know, you asked me the other day which rider I would pick if I was going to go into one major race, and my answer was Joel. I haven't been around Flavien enough to make the call. He's ridden a couple for me, and I've been real happy with him. But who cares? I've said this before. Who cares about polls? Somebody's opinion. Who's going to tell you what? There's so many great riders in this country and in this game and in the world. So many great trainers and great horses. This is again. We don't need polls. Line them up and let's all see who's the best.
Timmy.
Dale used to be the commissioner of racing. I'm telling you.
Well, I'm ready to be. But I think polls and all this stuff is for you, the media, to have something to write about and talk about and argue about.
Well, if we didn't have that, we wouldn't have a job, right?
Exactly.
We wouldn't have this segment.
What do you mean I don't?
You don't have your Times Union anymore.
Well, I got it, but it's just I'm on sabbatical.
Right, there you go. All right.
but as far as the poll goes, I mean, yeah, it is a list. I mean, the Thoroughbred Commentary, they're based in Europe, and you know, Ivrad and Luis Saez are in their top 10. I mean, Joel's having a season for the ages. I mean, he's with the 49 graded stakes wins he's got. I mean, I don't know if he's going to catch Jerry Bailey, 55, but, you know, it's Joel Rosario is, if I was a trainer and I had to have a go-to win, I think I'd put him on the horse right now, just the way he's riding. He's just so.
Well, 3 weeks ago, he went with Iran.
Well, it's 3 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
All of a sudden, Arad's been in a slump for 3 weeks, right?
You see what I mean about polls?
That's what us media people do, Dale. I'm gonna start a poll about how many Christmas presents Dale Romans is going to buy this year.
Right. It's going to be a hell of a lot more than he receives.
But as far – and Flavien Prat, I mean, I think that, you know, he deserves to be on the list, which Dale hates, but – you know, he's a guy that, you know, a lot of people really don't know that much about. He's only been riding here in the U.S. on a regular basis since 15. And, you know, he's become a go-to rider out west. He's got a bunch of riding titles at Del Mar. But he's not in the, you know, household name, if you will, category like maybe Joel and my old friend Irad and Jose Ortiz, Luis Saez. But, you know, yeah, I think that if you're going to have these polls, which Dale hates, I guess they did get it right.
All right. Final topic for today. Again, you can listen to I Ask, They Answer every single weekend here. 10:30 Eastern is when we kick it off on the Equine Forum. If you miss them, head back to our website and check out the podcast of each of these segments. They have been really informative. All right, final segment, and it involves Gulfstream's championship meet, which begins on Friday. Trainer Safi Joseph Jr. comes into the meet with a ton of momentum, having just captured the fall meet title and the spring-summer meet title before that. Safi finished 8 wins behind Hall of Famer Todd Pletcher at last year's championship meet. Of course, Pletcher recorded his 18th title for the championship meet last year. He's been unstoppable. Joseph was quoted in an article this week, guys, as saying the championship meet is Todd's meet. Last year we were pretty close, but we didn't have as many horses as we have this year. I think we can give him a run for his money. What are the chances Safi Joseph Jr. walks away with the championship meet training title this year?
He's got a solid chance. He wins a lot of races, but I will say one thing. Todd Pletcher will walk away with the money title. So it'll be about show me the money. I don't think he's as concerned about the number of wins anymore as he is winning the big ones, and he'll win all the big ones down there. He's a powerhouse, getting stronger all the time.
Yeah, I mean, Todd is Mr. Gulfstream, just like he's Mr. Saratoga. When he wins all those meet titles, it was almost shocking to some people a couple of years ago when Chad Brown started his run and knocked Todd off. Can Safi Joseph do it? Yeah, why not? I mean, he actually started more horses than Todd during last year's winter meet. But you know, it's also like, I don't want to say liken this to the JVs trying to take on the varsity. And I'm not saying that Safi's a JV trainer, but the analogy is that, you know, he's got to step it up a little bit. And, you know, he's got more horses, but Todd's got a bunch of horses, and Todd's quality has usually always been more than Safi's. But, you know, Safi's a good horseman, and he's going to get his share of wins. Does he have enough in his barn to knock off Todd? I don't know about that, but if I was going to do a poll on this, I think I'd put Todd on top. What about you, Dale?
Yeah, I'll put him on top anyway, but I will. He's way on top. I mean, Safi could win the title for winning the most races, but Todd will win the title for winning the races.
You know, Dale, that's an interesting point, because we so often, you know, there's press releases that are sent out after every meet at racetracks, and they say, oh, so-and-so was the leading trainer, so-and-so was the leading owner, so-and-so was the leading jockey. What do trainers covet more? Is it that leading trainer title by number of wins, or would they much rather finish second or third in the standings and walk away with more money?
Well, I'd speak for myself. I think earlier in my career, training titles were very important. They got less and less important, and I'm sure the same with Todd, and more important about trying to win the right races and develop the right horses. And you start thinking about your legacy a little more, and I think that you'll be remembered more for big races than multiple races.
But isn't it more important, though, to also put money in your pocket, too?
That's the big races. Show me the money.
Well, we'll see how it plays out. Again, that championship meet kicking off on Friday. Todd Pletcher, Safi Joseph, both going to be loaded and coming down there with the best horses, as will Dale Romans. Dale, looking forward to your horses strutting their stuff at Gulfstream, my friend.
Yeah, we're going to have a good winter. I think we had a great fall and some good two-year-olds coming on to beat three. It's going to be a fun winter.
All right, we'll see if Dale Romans can dethrone Todd Pletcher. What do you think?
Right. I don't think so. Not a number of wins. So, you know, Todd won his first race. Who he beat, his first time he ever won a race, where he beat me. I see he's been beating me from the very beginning. His first race, I ran second.
Maybe this will be the winter of Romans.
Who knows?
Like that, the winter of Romans.
All right.
Well, Dale, we'll talk to you next week. Timmy, we'll talk to you next week. Appreciate the time, guys. I ask, they answer. We'll do it all over again. 10:30 Eastern time next Saturday. Fun stuff. Yeah, you know, interesting point by Dale, though. What's more important? As you heard him say, in the early days of his career, those leading trainer titles meant a lot more than they do today. He'd rather have the money today, and, you know, who can blame him? Yeah, that will be interesting to see how this plays out in terms of the number of wins. Can Safi Joseph Jr. challenge Todd Pletcher in that category? He gave him a little run last year. He thinks he can give him an even bigger run here in 2021-2022. When I come back, I'll wrap up the show, tell you what's ahead on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the Equine Forum on HRN.
Thoroughbred Charities of America raises and distributes funding to approve nonprofits that help thoroughbreds and the people who care for them. TCA's annual grants support aftercare and incentive programs, health and human service initiatives for backstretch and farm workers, and equine-assisted therapy programs that utilize thoroughbreds. TCA is one, helping many. Please support TCA today at tca.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
James Brown and Bill Cowher welcoming you back to Dennis Melvin's house. It's time for the Midnight Snack Run.
This is one tricky obstacle course. Sticking to healthy habits in this kitchen is going to take focus and determination, but it can be done, JB.
He's already entered the snack part of the course, and he's eyeballing a jar of chocolatey candy.
That is tempting right off the start.
Uh-oh, he's reaching, Bill. But he pushes it away.
Great stiff arm.
He's approaching a plate of delicious-looking iced cookies.
Oh, Dennis, you only want one of those.
He blows
goes right by him for the apple.
Oh, the fridge. It's make or break time, JB.
He stares down some rich-looking treats. Uh-oh, looks like he's headed for the soda. Wait, he jukes left, grabs a water bottle, and shuts the door with his elbow in record time.
Unbelievable move. I gotta see that again.
And he's out. He even turned off the light.
That's the way you execute a midnight snack run.
Stand Up to Cancer and Rally want you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help me get back to doing the things I love, like meeting friends or traveling? And can I do it without putting my family at risk? You've got questions. That's normal. So visit getvaccineanswers.org for the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front. And nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, getting ready to wind down this edition of the Equine Forum. It has been a very, very busy morning. We kicked it off with Bobby Newman's interview with Kevin Kirstein. Nice enough to spend time walking through the big races at Churchill Downs later today on their closing weekend. And then Bobby and Bob Nastanovic, who walked through all of the greatest stakes at Del Mar on this Saturday and Sunday. You heard their analysis in the first hour of the program. That came as part of the show from our weekend stakes preview presented by Naira Betts, and their analysis was just spot on, fantastic. We'll see how it all plays out. But if you didn't miss any of those, head back to our website before playing the races today. That's horseracingradio.net. We'll have a podcast of the show up there shortly. My thanks to our industry star of the week, Lynn Kleberad, who joined me on Trainer Talk this week, and then you got a chance to hear from her looking back on her lone greatest stakes win. Unsung heroes this week. What an interview with Peter Fitzgerald. He was fantastic. The longtime Naira Paddock judge who will be retiring coming up, I believe December 5th is the day that he will end his nearly 50-year career on the racetrack. He's just a wonderful person, and that was a lot of fun to catch up with him. My thanks to Claiborne for making those segments possible. Dermot Carty from Adina Springs was here telling you about the Adina Stallions. Going to start taking a look at stallion rosters at major horse farms over the course of the next several weeks. So for those of you who do have mares and are looking for the right stallion, you'll want to make sure you're tuned into the Equine Forum every Saturday morning, because I'll be welcoming somebody from the farms to talk about their stallion rosters and give you some insight as to which stallions you might want to take your mare to. In the room with Sean Clancy, Lafitte Pinkai, we look back on a classic there in that segment. Kurt Becker, Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And then I Ask, They Answer. My thanks to Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin for doing that segment again here this morning. Question of the day was to tell us about the best Kentucky Derby future wager bet that you've ever made. And you can keep those responses coming at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you don't do social media, just email me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know. Didn't get to our historical dates in racing history segment this week. We were kind of backed up on time, very busy with all the content we were bringing your way. But I'll just let you know that here are a couple of the dates I was going to throw out there for you. Of course, we're sitting here today on November 27th. Yesterday, November 26th, 1992, it was Sandy Hawley who became the ninth North American rider to win 6,000 races. His record victory came aboard Summer Commander in the second race at Greenwood Racecourse. And Sandy Hawley, one of the nicest guys that you will ever meet in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Fantastic person. One hell of a rider, too. Yesterday, in 2001, November 26th, was the day that Seabiscuit, Laura Hillebrand's best-selling book about the rags-to-riches story of the 1930s thoroughbred champion, and the colorful people, of course, associated with him, was honored with the United Kingdom's prestigious William Hill Sports Book of the Year Award. That was on November 26, 2001. And one more for you. Coming up this week, November 30th, 3 days from now, it was November 30th, 1989, that Jockey Kent DeSormo surpassed Chris McCarron's 15-year record for most number of victories in a single season when he rode his 547th winner of the year at Laurel. Think about some of those jockeys that have come out of Maryland, right? I mean, that has been a hotbed, much like Louisiana, for example. But Maryland, some of those young riders that got started there, there's two of them right there. Chris McCarron, one of the best ever to do it. Kent DeSormo, certainly one of the best ever to do it. Edgar Prado, how about him? Yeah, dominated Maryland racing for a long time. There have been so many good ones to come out of that state and go on to big things in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Well, all right, here's what's coming up this week. Before we wrap things up for you here this morning, don't forget to join us again on Wednesday as we kick things off with another edition of Race Day presented by Twin Spires. That comes up 3 to 6 Eastern. 6 o'clock is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Then on Thursday, you have Race Day, followed by the BristNet.com call-in show. But that will not be the case this week. Everything's changing coming up. Well, no, actually, it will be the case this week. I've got my weeks all mixed up. Man, tough to be the Baron these days, isn't it? 3 hours in the books. Make sure you join us. Here, do this. Go to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out our schedule. It's probably better than me trying to recite it for you here on the show this morning. My thanks to all of our guests for making the show possible. My thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, to Chauncey for handling all of our social media. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for participating in the poll question. I'm Mike Pena. We will talk to you next week on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, hey, big game this weekend. Got to get a win. Go Steelers.